Traveling the Vortex.
We've joined the Doctor as he travels the Vortex and landed at episode number 89. And what sort of man doesn't have a trowel? Put it on your Christmas list. I'm Keith.
I'm Sean.
I'm Glenn.
Do you guys have Christmas lists?
I have a Christmas list.
I have a Christmas list, absolutely.
I don't have a trowel.
I have a Christmas list!
I do!
I do!
I don't have a trowel on my Christmas list.
I want one that I can like fold up and put in my drip pocket. That is very cool.
And then hit robots with it.
You are such a homeowner. You have a yard, and
I know
you're
what
just
you guys
all
are getting for Christmas this year.
I have a trowel. I don't have one that I can fold up. But
you guys are both getting foldable trowels for Christmas
awesome.
This year.
If you can find that foldable trowel,
oh, I'm sure they have one.
I don't know.
Can I have a portable spork?
Is it what spork isn't
as
portable?
As long as you clean it after every time you eat off of it.
One of those that folds up. A titanium
a
spork,
Swiss Army fork?
A Swiss Army spork.
Swiss Army spork. What else would be in that knife?
A knife, scissors, everything else. Just
toothpick.
Instead of a fork, it'd be a spork.
Sonic screwdriver.
Ooh. Swiss Army sonic screwdriver.
Swiss Army sonic screwdriver. That's kind of a redundancy there.
Since we're dreaming.
Still waiting to get my remote.
Can I have a transporter?
I haven't ordered it, but I'm still waiting for it to just magically show up.
That's on Keith's Christmas list.
That is on my Christmas list.
I thought maybe you ordered it there for a second.
No.
What? Really? Oh,
I would have mentioned it a long time ago if I had.
I crack up when I see these posts on Facebook and everybody's going off about, did you see the new blah, blah, blah? I was like, we talked about that 3 months ago. Listen to our show.
Where have you been?
But I was in my working overnights.
Get with the times.
And my long hours of boredom. My sister posted a website on my Facebook called thisiswhyimbroke.com. Have you guys been to this website?
No.
Not many Doctor Who things. But on it, for $55,000, a street legal Tron motorcycle.
Sweet.
Oh, it's
it's electric.
It's all electric.
That's awesome.
It's not gas powered. It's electric.
Awesome. And unfortunately, I went to the link and the link took me to some other motorcycle.
So it makes virtually no noise.
Yeah, and it lights up and everything. It is really awesome.
That's awesome.
I want one.
I told Mel I'd be tempted. I don't like motor.
$55,000.
Well, I have other things that are in line before the Tron light cycle. But I'm kind of an anti-motorcycle person. Mel's a big motorcycle person.
This seems so wide, though, it wouldn't have as... I don't think you'd tip it as easily.
Yeah, I think between the Tron light cycle or the Batpod, with the big tires on them, I feel like that I could almost drive. But I told Mel...
And you'd always have to wear a leather suit and a helmet during the Tron light cycle, or you just feel wrong.
And you couldn't drive it during the day.
I wouldn't
go out in shorts on it, but...
When you have to have an identity disc that lights up and
do
the whole thing.
But Mel asked me once, she goes, so if I get another mic, you're not going to ride with me? I'm like, no. Another bike.
No.
You
heard Mike, I heard Nike.
She says, is this a macho thing? Like, you won't ride on the back of the... I said, it has nothing to do with that. It has to do with I'm not getting on a motorcycle. If you buy one with a sidecar, then...
Did you say bide? Go ahead, sorry. No, I'm poking.
Yeah. But I'm not grumpy. I'm getting grumpy.
You just sound grumpy because of your voice. You're losing your voice.
Yeah, my foray into the NFL today.
The bear's never grumpy until you start poking him with the stick, and then he gets grumpy.
No, you're grumpy frequently. That's why it's fun to poke
you. What are you saying? I'm the bear all the time?
Pretty much.
Oh, no, no, no.
The achievement's all about you, baby. My name's not on it.
Anyway, Mel wants a motorcycle. You don't want one.
Yeah.
You won't ride on one.
Won't ride on one. I'll ride it if she gets a sidecar. I'll, you know.
Will you dress up like Short Round?
Sure.
Or Robin.
Because a 6 foot four Short Round makes a lot of sense. Wrong way, Dr. Jones. Left tunnel.
Or Henry Jones.
Or Henry. Yeah. That might be easier
now that I planned on with my white hair, and I'll borrow your tweed coat. And
or Bucky from the Captain America comic book.
I'll sit around in the sidecar with my pants off like Sean Connery did. But Yeah, I thought you buy a sidecar. You can buy one of those old World War II motorcycles. I'd ride around in that, but just a regular one? No. She goes, it's just like a bicycle. I said, no, it isn't.
I don't get up to 60 miles an hour on a bicycle. I mean,
Mel's one of those. She is an extremely safe, motorcyclist. She's constantly helmet and jacket and pads and the chaps, the whole bit. And she admonishes other people when she sees them nonstop. You know, look at this guy. He's leaning into the turn. He's doing it wrong. He's doing, she knows far more about it than I do. But, she would be an extremely safe driver. Doesn't matter. Not getting on it. But the Tron bike, maybe.
That's my new sign. It says tangent.
Glenn has a tangent sign.
Every time.
Do we need to get a sign that says sarcasm?
Every time.
You have a sarcasm sign?
Continue. Talk amongst yourselves.
How was your guys' week?
Oh, it was awesome. It was really, really awesome.
What made it awesome?
I have no idea.
Mine kind of sucked.
Yours was exhausting. Well, what did you do this week, Geek?
I worked overnight all week. And by Wednesday and Thursday, my body got used to it. So I got home Thursday, wasn't tired.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And then, after working overnights all week, we watched our nephew for about 7 hours on Saturday, which was fun but exhausting.
Yeah.
Also because as I mentioned before, I'm his playmate. I'm not an authority figure. He won't listen to me at all. So it got a little frustrating.
Yeah.
But that was my week and weekend.
That's too bad. I didn't do anything too exciting this week. I worked my normal shift. Then we had shooting for Tough Grit on Don't Care. You had to find something you could finally ride on, then.
Yeah.
then
it's kind of anticlimactic on the joke end, wasn't it?
We shot one of our final episodes so far of Tough Grit. We've only got 5 left, I believe it is.
How was the premiere party?
Premiere party was a lot of fun. We did that Monday night. I didn't get to go for the whole thing, and I didn't get to be there for the viewing, but Sean will talk a little bit about that. But I did come for about a half hour and eat. Yeah, I did come for a half hour and eat.
They did have the volume up. We had to request that. And we had to request them to change off of whatever. Is the NBA still on? There was a sporting event on that night, and they changed it over to RFD TV. And I'm not going to talk in any way disparagingly about RFD TV. But I don't know what that train show was that led into us. If that's our lead in, we could be in trouble. Because it's a show about, if you're up late at night and you see the infomercials and it's like trains across Great Northern America and it's just footage of trains. Trains backing up, trains going forward, trains in the Rockies, trains in the plains.
I'm sure it's great for train aficionados.
Yeah, I mean, I love trains. And even I was kind of going, snore. Just nothing's happening on this show about trains. There were no train crashes. It was just trains.
There were no train crashes. Demolition train derby.
All shows would be better if they crashed something. NASCAR. Why do people want to watch NASCAR? They're waiting for that tire to fly into the stands.
I don't know why people watch NASCAR.
Yeah.
I don't even
watch
it.
To see if they're
going to
make the left turn.
Yeah.
But, no, it was the viewing party was fun. We had a very good turnout, everybody worked on the show, but and a free dinner, which I'm not going to complain about at all. Yeah. Thank you, Dave.
And then,
had a pretty good restaurant. Well, I've never been there before. We ate at Jose Peppers.
I beg to argue. Yes, you have. That's where we ate when we went to.
I've never been to ours.
Okay.
I've never been to the one here in Speed. You're right.
Over in KC.
We stopped there and ate after. Yeah, Wichita. After seeing Dark Knight Rises.
But I didn't have any money then.
But you still ate.
Yeah, but I had an appetizer that I split with Mel. This was like ordering a real meal.
Fair enough.
Which I still didn't have any money, but Dave was paying, so it wasn't a big deal. But it was a good time. It was kind of fun to see all that work, that we've talked about and the blood, sweat, and tears and everything kind of come to fruition with, ta-da, there it is on TV. And apparently
RFD TV, by the way, is the home of Hee Haw reruns, too.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, why can't we have that?
You guys sounded way too excited. About
better than
that.
Train.
It's more.
Maybe you didn't hear me.
I don't work for. I don't work for RFDTV, so I can say this. I don't think anything aside from what you guys have done on the, I would be interested in watching on this network.
I have a
except
show.
For Hee Haw. I would
I
watch.
Have that. A show on the network, and there's nothing else on there I would watch, including Hee Haw.
Hee-Haw's the closest thing to something I would watch on that network.
I thought for a minute
your guys' show excluded.
I thought for a minute you were going to say including my show.
I'll tell you what.
I saw it did go up online, but I haven't got a chance to watch it yet.
It did, finally, yeah.
I won't bring myself probably to watch this thing on RFDTV, although I don't cable anyway, so it doesn't matter. And I'll tell you why. Because my arduous task now is closed captioning these things. And you talk about watching this thing over and over and over and over again. And I'm getting a little tired of these episodes. So.
You've seen it ad nauseum as anyone.
Yes, ad nauseum.
Can we close caption our podcast?
Who would see it?
I guess it would I guess it would go in the show notes.
Where would you put the words? I got a deal for
channel.
You. If you transcribe our shows, I will figure out a way to capture
them. There may be deaf Whovians that would like to listen.
We can
and
just
can't.
Put a transcript.
And so we can put it up online on the closed captioning so they can see it.
It wouldn't be closed captioning, but okay, I understand what he's saying.
That's a good point.
Thank you.
It's in a complete audio format, but yeah, okay. We have
a really bad joke, but
episodes.
I'm not going to do it.
Go back to episode one. Start transcribing these, and we'll do it.
Okay.
All right.
I'll get right on that. What else did you guys do? You didn't do anything.
No, we had this was our first weekend that we didn't go out of town or do something huge, so we just kind of relaxed this weekend.
And it was a gorgeous weekend here.
It was a gorgeous weekend. I did
Friday. Well, that rainstorm in the middle of the shoot. Well, Friday kind of sucked.
Oh, did it rain? I don't know. I slept.
Oh, big time.
I can't complain because we need the rain so badly. Can you believe this? All that rain. I mean, we had this huge downpour just right in the middle of, thunderstorm, and we pulled up radar, and it was red. Like, oh, wow. And, of course, you left in the middle of that, so you missed that.
Well, it was raining when I left.
Yeah, well,
we did that first challenge in rain, not the downpour deluge had.
Well, you saw the Facebook page. We broke and had to
shelter
in the barn.
You're all standing in the barn.
Well, that was. They stopped and they said, "Well, the first question was, do we break for 2 hours and wait for the entire storm to pass and then come back out in between this and the next one that's coming, or do we break for 15 minutes, let the severe stuff get passed, and then keep going?" And the contestants were the ones that were like, "I ain't waiting for 2 hours. Let's get it done." Because because they were lifting hay bales on this one, and it was going to get really soggy and wet if they waited too long. So I don't blame them.
Yeah,
These things are already 25 pounds a piece that they were picking up.
Probably more than that, you think?
But or 50. I don't know how much they were.
30, 35.
I'm not on a farm. I don't know. But so then we're standing.
Wait, what? We're not on a farm.
I'm not on a farm.
Oh, we're not on a farm.
Wow.
You, however, own a trowel.
Yeah, but also in a yard.
There's that. But then, okay. So where do we take shelter? Do we truck everything down the hill and go back to Mom's house, or what? And Hank looks at the barn. He goes, "Well, just shelter in the barn." And people kind of looked at him, and then they looked at the barn, and then they looked at Hank, and then they looked at, because this is not a sturdy structure.
it's an old barn.
And that was his point. He says, "It's been here since 1888, according to the sign on the front. It'll be all right."
Been there this long.
So, yeah, all right.
It's the only thing that didn't get taken by the tornado.
Yeah. So we hid in the barn and waited for the deluge, which was... But all that rain, I mean, it just poured heavy. And Mom said they got less than a quarter of an inch, according to the rain gauges. Yeah, it's like, are you kidding me?
It's not the heavy rains that accumulate. It's the long, light rain.
The drizzles. I mean, I got more than a quarter of an inch soaked into my jeans. My boots are still out back drying, but.
Well, what else you do?
What did I do? Well, I'm a little hoarse today because I went to opening day at Arrowhead. I went to the Chiefs game.
Okay.
I would have gone anyway if I'd, because I am a fan, but a friend of ours, Will, wanted to do that for his birthday, and so we went to Arrowhead, and it was a typical day at Arrowhead. any of the football fans out there that are listening are going, I feel for you, buddy.
I'm sure it wouldn't even be on a typical day because this was the, you know, this opening season. This is
it was the opening day of the 2012.
You'd think it'd be a bigger, better festivity.
Oh, it was. I mean, it was cool. It was opening day of 2012 season. Unfortunately, the 2011 Chiefs showed up, so there was that. Yeah, well, see, this is the funny. You see the hat.
He has a Chiefs
hat. I have a Chiefs hat. So we get to the stadium, and this is going on the YouTube channel.
Well, you mentioned it. We got to take a picture.
Very least take a picture of it.
So we get to the stadium. We climb up into the rafters where our seats are at, and I'm sitting there, and I'm mentally calculating the position of the sun and where we're at on the field versus where we're at in the stadium, and I realize that at noon, before the game starts, the sun will be here, and at the end of the day, the sun will be here. It's going to pass directly over our heads lengthwise across the stadium. We will not get any shade today. Ooh. And I applied sunscreen, but...
Looked like Phil didn't.
Well, yeah, Phil did not. He's a raccoon face.
As red as I was coming back from Mexico.
So I didn't bring my hat, and I stewed about it because it's like, man, I know that these things are going to be expensive in the stadium. I just, Yeah, okay. But, you know, so I stewed about it, and I finally decided, all right, screw it. I'm going to go get a hat.
I feel like drunk in that picture.
And this is a surprise look.
I got it.
And so I look at Phil, and I was like, I'll be right back. So I get up, and I go down, and right around the bottom of the stairs was the thing. And I walk in, and they had this sweet, I mean, it was stylish. It was really cool. I'm not one for hats. I really am not. But this was a really cool hat. It was charcoal. And it had the arrowhead.
Oh, wasn't that one?
Not this one. You may notice this one is not charcoal. Had this charcoal hat, red arrowhead, red KC stitching on it. It was a sweet looking hat. I was like, how much is that one? It's $31. Okay. I'm going to do it. Yeah, let's go ahead and do it. Oh, they only have it in small. It's a fitted hat. You've seen my melon. They know way small is going to fit on this. So I asked the lady, I was like, well, do you have the same stock everywhere else? And she says, no, they're all different. It's like, so I don't know if anybody else is in the stadium is going to have that particular hat. She goes, we don't know.
That does not seem well organized.
Well, nothing at the new Arrowhead was well organized. That's my first time to the revamped, ta-da, oy vey. So I run down to the other...
How's that retractable dome? Is that
cool? Yeah, that hasn't been up to you. You know, they vetoed that because it was too expensive, and I can understand that. But quite honestly, if I lived in Kansas City, I'd have voted for that just to see how they would have built it.
You would have paid the extra money.
You saw the concept. Oh my God.
We've got two stadiums. We've got Arrowhead, and we've got the K, or Kauffman, or the Royal Stadium. And they sit, football and the baseball stadium sit side by side in one immense flat parking lot. And they've been trying to get a Super Bowl, and they won't do it because we don't have a dome. So the concept was to put a series of gigantic girder poles across this parking lot and put a floating cloud roof on top of this thing that would roll back and forth and cover both stadiums depending on which game was in session at any given time. I'd pay to see that built.
Yeah.
Raise my taxes. I want to see this. Anyway. I get the tangent flesh. So anyway, so I run down to the other end of the concourse.
You're the one that mentioned it.
I know. He asked. I run down to the other end of the concourse. You can't mention that and not explain it.
All it does is take a word, but I can get him off on anything.
I would be the greatest college professor in history because my class would learn nothing. And they'd be like, what are we going to talk about today, Mr. Collins? Well, I don't know. What do you want to talk about? Let's talk about this.
They'd learn a lot about everything,
about everything but not on the syllabus. My syllabus would be a blank piece of paper.
Ask me.
And you'd have to record every seminar so that you could put it on the test.
Yeah. Talk about this hat.
So I got run down to the other end of the concourse, and they don't have it at all. The hat's not available. So I asked them, and well, you might try down in the main, you know. And it's like, okay, where's that? It's like, well, it's down in section 101. Okay, so I go to the elevators because they've installed the elevators now. It's like I'm not running down this
now,
big
is
long
this
ramp.
During the game?
Not yet.
Oh, okay.
So I get to the elevators, and sheer pandemonium, chaos. Nothing. The people standing there are like, this is the first year they've had the whole setup in use and ready to go, and nobody knows anything about how these elevators work. It's an elevator, guys. Up is up, down is down. Push the button, let's go. the people riding the elevators do not know where they get off. The people that are running the elevators, they actually have the guys in the suits and the ties, you know, running the elevators. They don't know which buttons to push. It's a mess. I was like, screw it. I'll take the ramp. So I run back down to the ramp and run all the way down to the bottom floor of the stadium through the Hall of Fame, which was actually kind of cool, into the big gift shop. They don't have the hat. It's like, are you serious? This is the main gift shop at Arrowhead Stadium. You don't have this hat. So I look at my phone, I look at the time, and it's getting close to kickoff, and I've got like 10 minutes. It's like, I should just go back up to my seat, and because this is opening day. I want to see the pregame festivities. I'm missing all of that. I want to see the, you know, Pledge Allegiance or the song.
National Anthem.
Pledge of Allegiance. I do that, too. I want to see the National Anthem and all that, right? And I can't bring myself to not do it because I left my seat to buy a hat.
You can't come back empty-handed.
I'm not going to come back empty-handed. So then I thought, well, there's one more possibility. I could go to one of the ones on the other side of the stadium.
Oh, my God,
and see,
Sean,
if they've got it. So I...
And you thought, this hat was a little pricey, man. Anyways, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, no, why? At this point, it's a quest. We're not giving up without my hat. So I run back upstairs to cross over to the other stadium, except I can't get there from here. Because of the way the stadium is configured, this ramp doesn't go to the... You have to go back down to get across to get back up because there's no crossways. So I was like, ah! So I get on the elevator. Mistake. And the doors open, and I come bolting out on the second floor and stop. And I'm in, like, the high roller suites, like the full-blown glassed, enclosed, you know, you're not supposed to be here, that kind of environment. Now, what's interesting is because of where I happen to be at in the stadium versus where the elevators are positioned, nobody questions anything. I could have hung out and watched the entire game inside one of these glass booths.
Right.
Unfettered, unbothered. Nobody had said nothing. And while outside in the concourse, you get the choice of hot dogs and hamburgers and nachos, in here they've got steak and shrimp. So that kind of gives you an idea of what the, you know, differential is. I find an escalator to take me back down so that I can get on another elevator to take me back up because the elevator that goes to the second floor doesn't go any higher. That's where the ticket checkers are, is at the bottom of that escalator. So there's a hint for you if you ever want to sneak into the NFL game. Buy the cheap seat ticket, go around on the circuitous route and five different elevators to get there, and you can get into the big ones. So I get on that elevator, cross over to the second concourse. They have the hat in small and medium. Okay. So I bought this hat instead. Because I'm done. I'm not running to the other end of this thing. I'm not hitting all four corners of the stadium. And it was at that moment that I hear, and I look up, and the stealth bomber that they had fly over the stadium for opening is going across, you know, and I catch this much of it from the corner of the V that the sky is exposed under this concrete concourse, because I'm not in my seat. I've missed the national anthem. I've missed the pregame stuff. By the time I got back to my seat, I had missed Atlanta's first opening drive that resulted in a touchdown. And meanwhile, I get back to my seat, and everybody's sitting there staring at me. And I'm like, what? Are you okay? Yeah? We tried texting you. And I look at my phone. I have a text from Phil. I have a text from Adam. I have a text from Will. And I have a text from Tamal all going, dude, are you all right? Because I've been gone for 45 minutes, and they thought I'd had a heart attack on the stairs or something. But I got my hat.
No.
You got a hat.
I got a hat. It's a cool hat, but it's not the one I wanted.
It is a cool hat.
It's a cool hat. I like it.
This was the second best hat there. Not the coolest
hat. No offense to your quest, but it's a hat you probably could have found anywhere in town.
Oh, I'm sure I could have gotten to the mall and found this bad boy for like $12.
Yeah.
$31.99.
The charcoal one you probably couldn't have found elsewhere.
We're going to pretend that he couldn't have.
Yeah. No, I'm going to.
I'll see it at the mall tomorrow, and I'll just be infuriated all over again.
No,
and it'll be $12, and I'll buy it just to spite myself. So that'll be a better story. But so yeah, they were. That was my, and then on top of that, the game sucked. So
it's not a great experience.
It's not a great experience at Arrowhead, but hey, right. Football's here.
Well, let's move on to news.
Our first bit of news is that Stephen Moffat has left Twitter. We don't know why. There's a lot of rumors and speculation as to why, but all we know is his Twitter account has been shut down.
What are some of those rumors?
Some of the rumors is that he's just too overwhelmed to, with Series 7, 50th anniversary, and Sherlock Series 3, he's just got too much on his plate to handle a Twitter account, which I'm surprised he doesn't have people do that for him. And the other is he got in this big hullabaloo with some not-so-friendly fans, and that's why he shut down his account. I don't know any details of to what they said and why they were giving him such a hard time.
There's a I have this from, where am I? TheMarySue.com, things we saw today. Okay.
Interesting.
But apparently, earlier in the week, Moffat had written, forgive my ignorance, is there a way to limit who can follow you and tweet you? In an effort to explain the situation, his wife, producer Sue Virtue, is it Virtue? V-E-R-T-U-E. Surely that's not how that's pronounced. I don't know. She tweeted, for all asking, Stephen Moffat as well, currently having a family lunch, but he's got a huge amount on, and Twitter was providing a distraction. She later added, obviously, there's a currently at Stephen Moffat, and it's an imposter and not the Moff. It's these sort of idiots that ruin Twitter for the majority of users. Now, this is actually an old fake account, but there you go. That may have something to do with it. So I sincerely hope that people are not pestering Stephen Moffat. These are the people that really just give fandom a bad name.
I agree.
It really does.
I totally agree.
I saw briefly an unrelated story, but there was apparently somebody has created a ribbon for convention goers that's, I wish I could remember the name of it now so I could give them credit. Back up or I've got your back or something. And basically, it's you can have one of these ribbons. You walk up to anybody's distributing, they'll give it to you. But by wearing this ribbon, you are committing yourself to the idea that you will not put up with anybody on the premises of this convention being bullied or harassed or specifically like the female cosplayers and stuff like that. And I thought, that is fantastic. That is an awesome idea. And somebody mentioned, hey, we should have these for Galley. Hey, we should have this for PlanetCon. And I thought, yeah, we could do that because it was a local, somebody who'd seen this.
Huh.
And then I got very angry.
The fact that we even need it?
The fandom, and specifically the fandom of the things that I am into, this should not be an issue.
Mm-hmm.
Period.
No, really shouldn't.
And these are the same kind of people, I think, that would send Stephen Moffat angry tweets about, dude, your episode sucked. I'm not going to go there. So,
We sincerely hope that's not the case.
Yeah, I hope he's just busy, but...
And in order to avoid the temptation, deleted it.
Yeah.
So I can see how, especially someone who has so much on their plate, it being, I want to go see what they thought, or getting notification on his phone's distraction. I could totally see that. So
he said eyeballing Sean, who was playing Jurassic Park on his iPad instead of doing French homework.
What else is going on in the news? Sean, you got a little bit of news?
Just a little bit. There were a couple more awards announced yesterday. Both Doctor Who and Sarah Jane Adventures have been nominated for this year's BAFTA CYMRU. Is that part of the name? Is it BAFTA? Is it just BAFTA Awards, or is it the CYMRU is a special division of BAFTA?
I think it's
Children
special division.
And Young
Media Recording Universal.
Artists. Oh, Universal?
Yeah,
you. Oh.
CYMRU.
Yeah, I don't know.
Awards.
We'll pretend we know.
Doctor Who's up for two. The Impossible Astronaut for television drama. The Series 6 finale, Wedding of River Song, is up for sound. And then Sarah Jane Adventures has The Curse of Clyde Langer nominated for the Children's Program Award. So there's that. More awards for the shelf.
Very good.
Maybe. We haven't won yet. They've just been nominated.
Hopefully.
But they did win last year.
It is an honor just to be nominated.
It's always an honor to be nominated. We should organize a podcasting award.
Moving on to feedback.
No, I'm saying like
there is.
Is there?
There's an awards system for podcasts and alternative media.
Is that what you wanted?
No, I was thinking like the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance should organize a...
Oh, okay. For the podcast.
for the Doctor Who podcast.
The Doctor Who community. Yeah. Okay.
I mean, if we can be eligible just, for something else, I'll be all kinds of excited.
You just won an award.
Yeah.
I just wanted a day off.
I just wanted a day off.
Feedback.
I'm really too froggy to do it tonight. You all want right. me to do it? I'll do it. Feedback. Is that like Old Man River?
I was going to say it was the Barry White edition
all
of the
you
feedback
did
jingle.
Was feedback.
Oh, that's even better. You can do it from now on.
No. All right. First up.
First up. Andrew.
Andrew.
Comment question. Hello, all.
Hello, Andrew.
Hello, Andrew.
Spoiler warning for the Australians and anyone else who has not seen Asylum of the Daleks. I guess we should just give that warning out now in general.
Oh, yeah.
Spoiler warning for anybody who has not seen any of Series 7.
Yep.
Sorry, we're going to talk about all of it and a lot.
Yep.
I just watched Asylum of the Daleks for the third time, and I really wanted to share my opinion of it with you. But that would fill several dozen pages, so I'll restrict myself to the main points. It was visually stunning with faultless acting, but let down by the script, which failed to be internally consistent. Again and again, the dialogue contradicted itself or made no sense in a Dalek context. Some examples. The Daleks have an asylum for mad Daleks, as it would be offensive to destroy such divine beauty. Their plan is to destroy the asylum and all the mad Daleks.
Now, okay. I agreed with that. I was like, yeah, he's right. That doesn't make any sense. But they weren't going to destroy the asylum until there was the threat of the Daleks escaping.
Correct.
So yes. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, no, that's what initially that's what I thought, too. I thought, well, they're going to destroy what they said they wouldn't destroy in the first place. But then, yeah, that was the point, is the fact that they were going to escape. So, as Sean said.
The next is the Doctor to Dalek Supreme. So tell me, who do the Daleks send when they're too scared? The Doctor to Amy Pond, hang on to scared, scares not Dalek. Any rebuttal?
I don't remember him saying, hang on to scared, scared's not Dalek.
Yeah, when she was downstairs.
Before she saw the dancing people.
Oh, yeah. Right. When she's becoming the Dalek. Yeah. Okay.
I don't have a rebuttal for that.
I don't know that. That's one of those things. You have to kind of be careful with Daleks because they're not robots. They are really cyborgs. Of a type. I mean, it's the Dalek casing. What everybody thinks of as a Dalek is simply the travel machine. I mean, this is it's their car.
Yeah.
And the Daleks are the genetically engineered lumps inside.
But they're genetically engineered to eliminate most emotion.
Except for hate.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Well, here's the point, Andrew. I think you're being too nitpicky because I think. I think the idea here is.
The Daleks have never been consistent.
Who do the Daleks send when they're too scared? I think the point or the weight of that statement is the fact that the Daleks are never scared. So this must be something that is making them scared. So there's something very, 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 very intense going on here in order for them to be scared. I think that's the point of that statement. But I think then we have to roll back to the idea of Daleks typically aren't scared. So hang on to scared. Scared is not Dalek. I don't think that's inconsistent because I think we're just putting the weight of the question, who does the Daleks send when they're scared, is because it's really bad. If it's come to the point where you have to send somebody else in here to take care of this for you, but in a general sense, Daleks typically aren't scared, so hang on to scared because Daleks aren't scared.
That kind of, I think, also lends a lot of weight to the potential problem if Daleks are not scared, if they don't generally get scared. But now they're scared.
That's how big of a threat
I mean, that's how big of a threat it could be. But, you know, I mean, I can see your point, too.
Andrews?
Yeah, Andrews. Yeah. I can see your point, too. But
no,
I can see both sides. He goes on to say, Oswin does a master delete of all information related to the Doctor from all Daleks everywhere, except herself. Speaking of which, why doesn't she recognize the Doctor the way all the other Daleks did?
Okay. Andrew, these are really simple. Okay?
This is because she's holding
on
to her manatees.
She didn't delete from herself because she was the one doing the deleting. If I'm going to wipe out information, I'm not going to wipe it from my mind, even though I'm part of a hive mind, and which
that's not, goes it's to an the information
second, that goes to the second part of my point here is, it is somewhat of a hive mind. It is an information net, as Keith said. So that's what she deleted it from. However, she's conscious of the fact that she deleted it, so she's not going to leave herself out of that.
I think it's a bit more outlandish to believe that the Daleks, all of them everywhere, instantly forgot who he was. Because they aren't cybernetic.
No, I think they did.
They have their own minds. So, still.
Keith, I think you're wrong, because I think that's playing into this season that no Dalek anywhere is going to recognize him, except for Oswin.
It's playing into a bigger theme in general,
exactly.
Including dinosaurs on a spaceship.
Yes, but here's the point. speaking of which, she didn't recognize the Doctor the way the other Daleks did. Well, yeah, she's a Dalek, but she doesn't know she's a Dalek.
Yeah.
So she's not tapping into this mind. She's just using
She's resisting it.
Yeah, and she's using this information network like a computer, like she's hacking into their system. But she's not necessarily digging in and looking at every file that the Daleks have, so there's no reason why she would know. She's already in denial that she's a Dalek or doesn't realize that she is in the first place, so there's no reason for her to have recognized him. I'm sorry, Andrew, I'm being harsh, but I think you're being a little too peaky.
She's also a new Dalek, so...
Well, she's not too new. She's been
a year.
She's been there a year.
That's new.
Well, but I think his point is that she should have been at least aware of what the other Daleks are aware of, but I don't think that's
only
true.
Only she allowed herself to be aware.
Right, that's just it. Because
she hasn't allowed herself to be aware. She thinks
she's hacking when actually she's just accessing different parts
of the opening doors of this network and
doing things that any Dalek would have the ability to do.
So that's why she doesn't recognize him, Andrew.
His next point.
Sorry. I hate to be so harsh, my friend.
Daleks believe themselves to be the supreme beings and that all lesser beings are worthless and should be exterminated. Yet, according to the Doctor, they like to assimilate geniuses from other races. Admittedly, it could have been the mad Daleks that did the full conversion, but it was still strikingly out of character, although it would be perfectly in character for Cybermen. Which made me wonder, do you think the script started life as a Cyberman story? A Cyberman story with Autons in place of the Dalek puppets working together to capture the Doctor so he can use his illogical mind to stop a mad Cyberman who's run amok, just like Bob. Anyway, I've used enough of your mailbox. Regards and best wishes to the happy couple. Thank you very much. Andrew.
Can I jump in this one first?
Go for it.
Guess what? I agree with him on this one. I don't know that I suspect that it was a Cyberman story. I like that idea, Andrew. I think it's a good theory.
It would have been a great Cyberman story.
Especially that could be it. I'm not sure that
the Cybermen.
If they had every Cyberman ever,
I'm not sure that's
that
would have
been a little easier.
I'm not sure that's where they would have gone with this. However, I do agree with the idea of they like to assimilate geniuses from other races. But yeah, I mean, it's like it goes against what you said before that they're the supreme beings and all lesser races are worthless and should be exterminated. I mean, it goes along with that. And so suddenly to go with this assimilation idea is way out of the Dalek's MO. So I totally agree with you on that, Andrew. That was one that I felt was a little inconsistent myself.
Yeah, and I agree. I thought the more I thought about it, and I've seen it twice now, and the more I've thought about it, the more I kind of, that's the one sticking point. The one out that I can allow for it is the fact that the Daleks themselves are not the ones doing it. It's the nanogene cloud that's, you know...
The nanogene cloud recognized the genius, and so it did a full conversion? Wouldn't they have to allow a full conversion to begin with?
I don't know.
That's what I would think.
I don't think... There were so many new ideas tossed at us in this.
The idea
that, first of all, they have these nanogenes. Secondly, that we... This is the other thing, is that the Dalek propers did have these puppets, these Daleks in disguise, as we jokingly call them. Well, they had to have got those from somewhere, so they're obviously utilizing some of this nanotechnology, I would think. I don't think these are fully engineered
Dalek
suits.
It's just like the ones on the asylum would be.
But I don't know that the regular Daleks are looking to assimilate people versus the insane Daleks.
No, here's the thing. Refresh my memory here. When did it ever say that the insane Daleks were trying to...
No, that's just us...
That's just a prepossession. Yeah.
No, see, I totally disagree with that. I don't think it was the Dalek... I don't think it was the insane Daleks had anything to do with it. This cloud, essentially, around this planet was one of the protective barriers, is what it was. And anybody that went through was going to end up being assimilated. It wasn't the insane Daleks that set that up. It was the Daleks as one of the defense systems for the planet. So the Daleks are the creators of these nanogenes.
Right.
The Daleks are the creators of the idea of creating Daleks if you went through this planet. So that was a self-defense thing. On the flip side of that, they have now taken that step because we do see the slaves. This is suddenly the replacement for the
Robomen
or the Ogrons or the any slave race that they have used. This is a supplement for that. And so I don't think it's necessarily even an idea of assimilating people to become Daleks in the way to serve them on the ship that way. I think what happens is you get a full conversion if you go through the cloud on the planet. And that's so that you just become a Dalek there and you're one of the masses there as well.
Because in order to go and...
It's the Daleks that are using the nanogenes that created the nanogenes. Right. It has nothing to do with the whacked out ones.
Yeah. Well, regardless, that is a bit of inconsistency.
Crazy.
And anyway, yeah, I don't think any of us can deny that was a little bit of a sticking point.
Yes, I that was one thing that I had a little issue with, but.
And it's easier to come back a week later after seeing it a couple times and start to be a little more critical on it, because I know we were all just mesmerized.
Even the second time I was mesmerized.
Even the second time, I'm still mesmerized and I'm still impressed with how genuinely good the episode is.
Yes.
But yeah, you do pick up on those little things. It's like, hey, wait a minute. But then again, it's Doctor Who, so there's a certain amount of that.
You have that with almost every single episode.
You have to suspend some.
There's a certain amount of that that you just let go.
You want to finish out his...
That's it.
I did finish. Oh, you read the... Anyway.
Okay. Yeah. So thank you, Andrew, for sending it in.
Yes, absolutely.
Provided some great discussion.
And please don't feel like you can't write in if you disagree with us.
We love hearing
people that disagree with us.
And I would love to give you the right answers.
Ignore Glenn.
And Glenn would love to give you the right answers.
Next up, Robert.
Robert writes, couple of things. First, about Jenna Louise Coleman in Asylum and being the next companion. It might be that the Doctor notices the resemblances after she joins him, and she tells her about Oswin. He tells her about Oswin. That could let her become more like Oswin, or... be more of a contrast to Oswin. Food for thought.
That's an interesting idea. However, it would only be in voice. And that would be the only way he'd be able to recognize her because he never saw her face. There was no monitors for him to see her.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
So the Doctor and crew doesn't know what Jenna Louise Coleman looks like.
I think that, as I said last week, I think that there's going to be a relation between the two and the fact that they might be the same character. I think so, what's ultimately going to happen. But that is, you know, we'll see. Too bad that there's a media con in KC the weekend of the 15th. I'll be in Topeka on the 15th as part of the Kansas Book Festival. I have a link to the festival in my blog, and let me know if you need the link sent. I hope you can make it down for Encounters next month. It looks like the Whovians will have a good presence there. Have you considered doing a podcast at a con or podcast panel? Cheers, Robert. Well, as a matter of fact, we have something in the works for Planet Comic Con next year in Kansas City, for certain. And beyond that, no. we're sort of looking at it as our test run as to whether we do panels or anything beyond that.
Have we considered it? Yes.
Yes. Yeah,
have
absolutely.
We actively looked into it other than Planet Con? No.
And we're sad to see you're going to be here on the 15th, although we might be able to. The con's not a whole day thing, so we might be able to.
I probably will be out.
Book festival, so.
I'm always exhausted after a con.
Well, it's not even that. It's because Mel's birthday is the 12th, and so we're using next weekend as kind of a, I'm not going anywhere, I'm not doing anything. We don't have a shoot on Friday, so we're going to kind of go down and use the con as an excuse to get out of town for a little bit and probably grab a hotel and you know.
Yeah.
Just hang out and do nothing. So
but I'll be back in town.
We probably won't be available, but these two guys might.
I'll be back in town. So,
well, it's always great to hear from you, Robert.
And do you,
and keep us posted on any of the stuff you're going to be.
Do you want the link? Can we find that? We'll get that the link for.
Yeah, I just have to email him and get the link.
Kansas Book Festival, and we'll put that in the show notes.
Which I believe is done by our First Lady.
Yes, it is. It is put on by.
I can't remember her first name now.
Brownback.
I want to say Linda, but that's all right.
Nope, Linda was Graves' wife.
Okay, yeah, that's who I'm thinking of.
It's Lady Brownback. And
yeah, is it Carol? Carol Brownback?
That doesn't sound right either.
Doesn't matter.
I'm sure I'll have her on the 5 o'clock next week.
You know what sucks? You know what else is next weekend?
What?
The Friends of the Library book sale.
Oh, is that next?
Yeah.
Dang it. That means it's going to be Sunday again until I go.
It was one more thing that I don't have money for. Reasons why I'm broke, websites.
You don't need a website.
Bought a hat. Yeah, I told Mel about it. You know what she told me? And I was all prepared. I had this very logical, okay, here's how I'm going to broach the subject. Unfortunately, the weekend that we're going to be gone, it happens to be the, you know, Friends of the Library book sale where they sell the used books and whatnot. But, you know, we went last year and we spent...
How many of those books have you read?
Quite a bit more than we should have. Neither one of us has the space for additional books, and we've not read any of the ones that we bought last year. So
I've started a couple of the books I got last year.
I haven't read a single one of the books that I bought at the sale, and I bought bags and bags and bags of books. And so I started to launch into this. I said, it's the Friends of the Library book sale, and Mel looked at me and she said, we don't need to go. We haven't read any of the books from last year's sale. I'm like, you know what? You're right. We don't need to go. Thanks for clearing that up for me.
Nice. Next bit of feedback comes from a first-time writer, Brenda.
Brenda writes, Dear Vortex Gang, to show you how wide-reaching your demographics are, I would like to introduce myself as a first-time writer and fairly new listener. I discovered your podcast when searching iTunes for Who-related podcasts earlier this year. I'd gotten a job that presented me with an hour-long commute each way and was listening to the Nerdist podcast to keep my sanity in Atlanta traffic. But as I needed to fill a minimum of 10 hours of drive time a week, I needed to supplement the podcast on my iPod. Yes, I use an iPod. I've been mainlining your show since then and have gotten up to the early part of this year thus far.
Achievement unlocked.
But last week, after watching Asylum of the Daleks, I couldn't wait to download your podcast review and share the episode with my boys. I do love sharing Who with other Whovians, and your review of this latest episode matched my enthusiasm for our new Who. And now, to totally expand that demographic, I'm an almost 60-year-old woman, my birthday's in October, who has loved science fiction since I was a kid. I'm old enough to have watched shows like Time Tunnel, Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea, Lost in Space, Star Trek, and Twilight Zone in first run. I was a proud Trekkie, long before Trekkers ever so named themselves. I tried to convince my mom to let me miss my 8th grade graduation because it took place on the same night as a Star Trek that they were showing a rerun of an episode I'd missed earlier in the year. I didn't know that syndication was coming for the show, and I feared I would never get a chance to see that episode again. Oh, how naive we were in those days. I learned how to build models when I helped my brother build both an Enterprise and a Sea View, the ship in Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea. I saw Star Wars as an adult and immediately signed on to that universe as well. I truly have loved all 6 movies, and I think I was able to enjoy the prequels because they weren't competing with a childhood memory of the original 3, but were rather an exploration of the backstory.
Hear, hear.
So you see, I come by my geek card honestly, and have embraced that part of myself for decades. Sadly, I missed out on Doctor Who in the early days. I was an adult when PBS started showing episodes in their kid show blocks, so the show wasn't on my radar in those days. I even missed the 2005 reboot of the show because it hadn't been part of my universe previously and didn't catch my attention at the time. However, as a devout Anglophile whose favorite channel is BBC America, I began to hear more and more about Doctor Who as the show gained in popularity. I caught a few episodes here and there, but had no one to escort me into the world of Who like Lucky Keith, so I didn't catch the fever. Then I saw David Tennant on the Graham Norton show just before The Waters of Mars was broadcast. I was intrigued by both Tennant and the show, watched the 3 specials that led into the regeneration of the 11th, and I was hooked for life. I was unemployed at the time and spent a glorious 2 weeks mainlining all of the shows from Rose through the 5th season. When Matt Smith started his run as 11, he had me at hello. I've only made brief forays into classic Who at this point, but it's definitely on my to-do list. When I do start that journey in earnest, I have your classic podcasts to guide my way. Thanks to Sean and Glenn and Keith for keeping me entertained on my commutes. Think of me when you take your side journeys into Star Trek, Star Wars, and British telly. I, too, love, as time goes by, Are You Being Served, Ab Fab, Keeping Up Appearances, The Vicar of Dibley, Faulty Towers, and on and on and on. And I know there's at least and know that there's at least one cool old lady in Atlanta who appreciates what you're doing to unite WHO fans around the world into a fan community. I probably won't be joining you on Friday Night WHO anytime in the foreseeable future. I'm in Eastern time, and I go to bed way too early to get in on that action. But to use a tactic already used by someone, I think it was Chrissy, if there's a cool old guy in Atlanta area who wants to get together and talk WHO, look me up. I'm on Facebook. Brenda in Atlanta. P.S. I just watched Dinosaurs on a Spaceship. What fun. I can't wait to hear your review.
Cool.
Thank you very much, Brenda.
Yeah, absolutely. That's,
it's always great to hear from a new listener and first person writing in.
And this is something that's kind of humbling to me because a lot of times we think of people within our own demographic listening to this show or people that are younger. It's an incredibly, I don't know what the word for it is, not humbling, but it's just it just really kind of grabs me when somebody of a generation that's older than us is listening to us and enjoys the same kind of things we do, Star Wars and Star Trek and, and Doctor Who. And it's so incredible because I tend to find too few people that are older than me that are into the same things I am. And this is incredibly cool that that Brenda is into this stuff and comes to from a different perspective. And I keyed into when she was talking about how she enjoyed all six films of the Star Wars saga because to her it was just a continuation or it was just exploring the backstory because it wasn't competing with a childhood memory for her because she saw them as an adult. And I think that that's true for a lot of fans. I think fans remember it from their childhood and they remember the things that it was invoked in them in their while they were children. And so they're so different to them that it just doesn't work for them now. Personally, it doesn't because, I love the first films the best. It is a wonderful childhood memory for me, but I agree that it's just an exploration of the backstory of the three films that I love. And so, but to hear it from that perspective, I realize that I think that's what a lot of fans today of Star Wars that grew up with Star Wars think. And that's very well said.
Brenda, you don't sound a day over 59.
I would agree.
I can only agree. I read this. I saw it when it came in, and I read it to Mel, and just got goosebumps reading it, which I did again. It is very humbling to not only know that we have people out there listening, but that enjoy what we do, and that we are escorting people to work and stuff. That really blows my mind that they choose to spend that much time with us in their cars and whatnot. So thank you, as always, thank you. Because if it wasn't for you guys, I mean, we'd still be sitting here doing this because it's something we enjoy doing. Yeah. But it's rewarding to know that other people think that it's worthwhile.
However, for every person that encourages us on our that like our tangents and like to listen to us, I know there's listeners out there going, oh, please don't encourage them. I just want to hear Doctor Who.
The last thing these guys need.
But thank you, Brenda. That was so nice to hear from you.
And we look forward to hearing from you again.
Absolutely.
Keep writing in.
Brenda, we did get your bit of feedback on the you sent a second one.
We got
one
it twice.
We did get it twice. And I don't think the comments page of the website sends any kind of notification.
I don't think it does send a confirmation, and I think that's what she was looking for. But we did get it both ways. So if anybody sends us feedback via the website, unfortunately, it doesn't let you know if we got it. And the WordPress issue, that's a whole other thing we're working on, Brenda. So we'll deal with that another time.
It's a little wibbly-wobbly wonky.
Yeah.
It is a little bit. Next up is Chrissy. She writes, Dear Vortex Boys, you know what the weirdest thing is? Having my feedback read out on the podcast mere minutes after I sent it out. Hopefully this feedback comes in time for you to look it over before it comes time to read it on the podcast. This time I didn't include any obscure Bible references for you to Google in the middle of recording. That might help. Invasion of the Dinosaurs.
Google that. Hang on.
You send whatever you want. We'll Google it anyway.
You act like we actually read these things in advance. Invasion of the Dinosaurs. I really like this story. The only complaint I have is that the title is a bit misleading. The dinosaurs really aren't the ones invading, but I can forgive that because I don't know what else you'd call this and keep all the twists and turns secret. Sarah Jane is brilliant as always, and I didn't realize this was only her second televised story until somebody mentioned it on Friday Night Who. I think it's funny that the Doctor and Sarah Jane spend the first episode being arrested and detained by UNIT while all this crazy stuff with dinosaurs is going on. Of course, once the Doctor gets back into UNIT, he's the one that figures out what's going on. Also, on the subject of Mike Yates, there was always something I didn't quite like about him. I just never warmed up to him as much as I did Sergeant Benton.
Now she's justified.
And now I know why I prefer Benton to Yates. Turns out Yates was a double agent for the bad guys. Okay, maybe he wasn't always a double agent, but his intentions turned out to be less than good in the end. The Brigadier was great, and the Doctor was wonderful, as always. Really, this whole story is just lots of fun. Dinosaurs on a spaceship. The robots were funny. The Triceratops was cute. And that's all I've got. Really, I have nothing of value to say here. I'm leaving this one up to you guys.
Aww.
Maybe you can come up with something substantial to say because I don't know how I feel about it. Good luck, Chrissy.
Well, as always, Chrissy, thank you. And yes, we will talk maybe a little bit more about dinosaurs on a spaceship.
A slight bit.
Yeah. I saw her blog post.
I didn't get a chance to read
immediately that. After I watched the episode.
On dinosaurs?
On dinosaurs. Oh. And it was pretty much that. It was, I don't know how I feel about this one yet. She says, it's not that it was bad. I'm not sure if it was good. It just, I don't know how I feel about it. And I was sitting there reading it going, honestly, I kind of feel the same way. I'm not sure where I fall on this one.
Well, this is going to be a short show.
No, I can wax. Are you kidding? I can talk a lot about it. I just at the time right after it ended, I sat there kind of going, I think I need to watch that again because I wasn't sure what I had just
watched. Have you? You haven't?
Yeah, I have. Oh, I watched it again tonight.
All right. Next bit of feedback comes from Holly from Wisconsin, or not my Holly.
Yes.
All right, she writes, hey guys, loved episode 88. Side trip numbers 3 and 4 were very enjoyable. Thanks for the pictures and the video you posted, Keith.
Thank you.
Sean, I would like to hear your thoughts on and top 10 list on Next Gen and DS9. Must have been something you talked about in the side trip, which I haven't listened to.
I haven't listened to his side trip.
I did listen to yours, Keith. I haven't listened to Sean's.
My Star Trek 101 is original series.
Yeah.
Star Trek 101. Okay. So
you gave a top 10 or just the series?
Or just the series.
Nice.
So you gave a top 10.
I gave a top 10 within that and then kind of said, well, maybe if I get enough people asking, I'll do another one.
Now she's asking.
Someone's asking. So
all right.
Look for that.
As long as it took to get this
in
one up.
The near, on the not-ish future.
On the 47th anniversary. Okay. Which, you know...
Or you could do the anniversary from next year.
I wish we hadn't said anything about posting that silly thing for weeks, because that would have been even better.
It would have just been out of the blue.
Yeah,
cool.
He just posted it on the 46th anniversary. That was really clever of those guys. They were really thinking. Was Friday night. I went, you know, I really ought to get that thing posted. And then Google's little doodle came up, and I went... Oh, tomorrow's the 46th anniversary. That's perfect. But in our own MO here, serendipity. She goes on to say, Invasion of the Dinosaurs. Like the story, I tried really hard to look past some of the dinosaur models that they used in this episode, and for the most part, it worked. The one that really had me shaking my head was the pterodactyl that tries to attack the Doctor. The Doctor gets to use his Venetian... Sean shaking his head.
Venetian, the pterodactyl was awesome. The Tyrannosaurus was not.
Both of them.
We'll get there.
The Doctor gets to use his Venetian Aikido skills quite a bit in this story.
And mad props, Holly, for spelling Venetian Aikido.
Prime Minister Grover and General Finch, I really didn't like them that much. At all, once it was known that they were behind what was going on with Professor Whitaker and putting Mike Yates almost right in the middle of it. I'm wondering if he didn't get some brainwashing to make him more obedient to what Grover and Finch wanted done. See, she's trying to justify it because she liked Yates, I can tell.
Yeah.
That's too bad. No, not that you want. I mean, I feel sorry for you if you liked Yates, because I sort of liked Yates too. He was no Benton, but I liked Yates.
He's no Benton, but
anyway, I really feel for the Brig and Benson in this episode with trying to stop the problem, but getting shut down at almost every turn. I was really hoping towards the end that the doctor would mention something about either General Finch or Prime Minister Grover looking tired. Ooh, that would have been really cool. That would have been awesome. Sarah Jane in this episode was great. She, of course, wanted to investigate what was going on, and the doctor wanted to make sure that she was safe after her run-in with the T-Rex. I love the ending where she says to the doctor she's done with time travel, and he just starts going on and on about the planet Florana, and she gives in. Dinosaurs on a spaceship. I enjoyed the episode. It was nice to finally be introduced to one of Rory's parents. Rory's dad seems to be taking some of this time travel stuff in stride. I'll wrap this up here. Shouldn't have much to say about it. I'll wrap this up here. Looking forward to hearing your thoughts on the episode. Holly from Wisconsin. And I should mention, happy birthday, Holly.
Yes, happy birthday
this week. So,
which was
mine is not belated Friday. Because I posted on her Facebook page.
Was it Friday or Saturday?
I don't think I was on Facebook on Friday.
I think it was Friday.
It was Friday.
Because you tweeted out during Friday night who to wish her happy birthday.
Yes, yeah, belated at that point. Oh, it was Friday.
It was Friday.
Because it's Saturday, because it was after midnight. I said now it's belated, but yeah.
Well, happy birthday, Holly.
Yes, hopefully it was a good one. Our next bit is a bit of audio from good friend Dr. Phil.
Let's give it a listen.
Hello, gentlemen. Dr. Phil here, having just finished Keith and Sarah's side trip, as well as halfway through Sean's Star Trek one. Just wanted to say hello with a few thoughts on dinosaurs on a spaceship. Now, I'll probably start off with how I kind of felt about the episode. I didn't really feel that excited about it. I know that some of the moments were visually stunning. I thought the pterodactyl attack was very cool. That the writing on the Triceratops was okay. Some of the shots, you could tell they really went out of the way to not show the Triceratops. But I thought there were a couple of things, probably, that called back specifically to older stories that I felt a little forced, like that probably moment. And I don't know why it bugs me. It probably does in the same way that in Utopia that David Tennant tries to carry off a variation on the indomitable speech from Ark in Space that Tom Baker gives so well. I almost don't like when you have to try to transplant dialogue from another doctor, because sometimes it doesn't feel quite right. But Matt Smith is great as always. I didn't particularly care for the villain very much. One thing I want to say that I really enjoyed so far is I'm really liking Murray Gold's scores this season a lot better than last season, because it kind of fell into the same problem that I felt with Series 3 and Series 4, is that he has to end up, because of the time constraints, it's not his fault, it's more of a production problem, of reusing cues a lot. You'll hear that a lot in Pond Life and such, but I thought that the balance of what was achieved was much more cinematic in the first two episodes of this series, since what I really, really dug about The Impossible Astronaut and Day of the Moon last series. Nonetheless, I thought Rory's dad was a standout. I really enjoyed him. I thought Nefertiti and the safari gentleman were a little too caricatured. I love the fact that at the end that Rory's dad gets to travel. That's very cute. But it just seems like there could have been a much more interesting thrust with Rory's dad, as if there was a bit of a conflict. I thought that having two people of the same genetic structure fly the ship was a bit convenient, but could have been a little bit more surprising if there had been a more of a conflict between the two characters. That's just my humble opinion. On the whole, I would still say that I really enjoyed Asylum of the Daleks a great deal more. I'm looking forward to what's coming up. I mean, not everything can hit it out of the park every week. So, you know, just look at Curse of the Bad Plot for that one. But anyway, keep up the great work, guys, and we'll keep listening. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Dr. Phil.
Yeah, absolutely.
You had posted something very similar to that on Facebook, and Sarah had read it and agreed with you on a lot of the points you made about dinosaurs on a spaceship.
It's odd. I found myself, as I watched it the second time tonight, thinking of Dr. Phil, because I was noticing more of the music and the musical cues in this. And I know that they had said previously, oh, it's going to be cinematic, and it's going to be this, and it's going to be that. And I felt very much that way with Asylum of the Daleks, that we get a little bit of I Am the Doctor, but there's much, much more not better, but interesting things going on musically with that one.
More variety.
It's a little more dynamic in places.
And Dinosaurs on a Spaceship was the same way. Mm-hmm. There were some beautiful pieces of music that were written for this, and I really enjoyed it, and I thought, I wonder if Dr. Phil cued into that.
I'm glad he brought that up, because think there are things that are happening this season that Moffat promised us, and I think he's coming through with, is he promised the more cinematic feel for each episode. And that's what's happening. All the way to the new openings and the Doctor font being different. With the posters that we've gotten, with the just the feel of the episodes, and then right down to the fact that Murray Gold is even on board, making them feel more cinematic as well. So I'm glad he brought that up.
And I bet with these, he has more time, or had more time, to work on the score.
That is a very good point.
That's very possible.
And probably why last season might have fallen down a little bit, because he probably felt a little rushed.
Yeah, in a crunch.
Yeah, this time having a little more leeway.
Our last bit of feedback comes from the other Phil, Odd Duck Phil.
Odd Duck Phil writes, "Hey, Hoopikins, hope things are going well for you. Also hope Glenn is getting his due and calling for a different opening each episode. In fact, if it hasn't happened yet, I think a 'sorry for doubting you, Glenn' moment would not go amiss. It's okay. I'll wait."
You're going to wait a while.
I didn't doubt you. I'm still not happy about it.
Different opening.
It was a different opening. Yeah. I mean,
you were right. I just hoped you were
not as grand and different.
No,
but the colors are different.
It's slightly subtle.
The colors are different and the font is different. The font's the same. It just has the texture.
Yeah, it's different.
The texturing I don't mind so much.
Love. It's awesome.
The texturing I don't mind so much. I still don't like the new colorization that they've got for the Vortex Cloud, because it looked
the overlay they put on it.
It's appropriate. It works.
No, it's not appropriate.
Yes.
I don't think the colors are appropriate.
The color was awesome because in Asylum it was red.
What I saw was green.
No, there were some greens in there, but the hues were a lot more like this one for Dinosaurs were green.
I didn't see any green side of the hues.
Oh yeah, look.
I have to look closer because I saw a lot more green in the last one than this one.
No. My problem is,
or maybe I'm flip flopping. Maybe it was more green in the last one and more red hues in this one. Yeah.
I may have
flipped that back.
Instead of standing out and making it, it made it look like, what's wrong with the broadcast?
It just looks so oversaturated.
No.
It looks really cool. No. I think the opens are fantastic.
I like the font in this one better than the last one. The texture.
The texture on it. Well,
we'll get to that.
But the texture in the last one was appropriate.
It was appropriate.
It was the Dalek bumps. And then this one, it was dinosaur scales. Yeah. I mean, it totally was appropriate.
So I wonder what they're going to do next week.
Parchment. Dry Western parchment paper.
I bet it is.
That crackle.
All right, go on, Sean. Yes, I got my due fill. Thanks. They don't like them, but they can see that was right.
They don't like them. Okay, on to these mother effing dinosaurs on this mother effing spaceship. Sam Jackson would have made this episode so good. I loved the sheer glee on Smith's face when the doors opened into the ankylosaurus. I've seen that look on his face.
The two ankylosaurus.
Saurus.
Sauruses.
Sauruses.
No. The two ankylosaurus.
That's plural?
The plural of ankylosaurus is ankylosaurus.
Okay.
Deer. Yes, deer.
Female deer, gray, tropical.
That's a doe.
That's where my brain went.
All right.
To the two ankylosaurus. I'd seen that look on his face since the first trailer, but it still put a smile on my face. Two, I'm not saying that Solomon didn't get what he deserved, but at the same time, it seemed a bit dark for the Doctor to send him off like that. Yes, he willingly committed genocide, and he had no qualms about inflicting pain or death to get what he wanted. But seeing the Doctor sentence him to death, yeah, he's going a bit dark. Foreshadowing. How many times did the Doctor look at Amy with sadness or regret? I really don't think Amy's getting a happy ending this half season. And, well, this idea's been rolling around in my head for a while. If something happens to Amy, Rory's going to lose it. He's already told the Doctor that he makes his companions risk so much to impress him. It wouldn't be hard to see him blame the doctor if anything happened to her. I really hope my gut's wrong and all, but I could see Rory coming for the doctor if things go wrong.
I've had that thought too, Phil.
Didn't they say recently that Triceratops never existed?
What? I never saw that article.
Yeah, there was something, but very recent, like a week or two ago. It wasn't that the Triceratops didn't exist. It's that the Triceratops didn't exist in the form that they believe they did. That that new fossil evidence shows that the head structure isn't necessarily what we believe, what we now envision as the Triceratops. Essentially doing the Brontosaurus thing where Brontosaurus was one particular creature. Now Brontosaurus is a category of creatures that include Brachiosaurus and all those different ones because they found a lot more long-necked dinosaurs. So I think the same thing has happened is I think the Triceratops is they're believing that maybe there were not mutations but differences within the species. And so if I remember this article correctly, technically it drops the idea that there was a Triceratops and that there might have been two different type of animals that we had originally put together to form the Triceratops, but now fossil evidence is pointing to the fact that they were actually two different types of creatures, and the facial structure was not necessarily what we see as a Triceratops now. There you go.
Interesting.
I may be way off base on that, but that's what I remembered from that article.
Thanks for ruining Jurassic Park, Phil.
Well, they already had to update Jurassic Park 3 from 1 to make it more
pretty
accurate.
Significantly. we'll get there. 5, I got a kick out of seeing Amy getting jealous, thinking that she and Rory had been replaced. Okay, that's it for me. Oh, and turducken is awesome, especially when stuffed with crawfish.
That wouldn't be a turducken, then.
Be a crawturducken.
I think maybe the chicken is stuffed with them.
Or turducken craw.
So then it'd be
turducken
a turcrawen. Turcrawken?
No, it's still a turducken.
You've got to get the duck in there.
It's still there's a turkey still with a duck with a chicken, duck. Oh, okay. But then it's also stuffed with
crawfish. That's what you're saying. A turducken crawfish. Is awesome, especially stuffed with crawfish.
Yeah.
So it's a turkey. It's a duck. It's a crawfish and a duck and a turkey now.
It's a crawfish and a duck and a chicken and a turkey.
And a turkey in it. Yeah, I forget the chicken in there. Chicken and turkey, yeah.
Odd Duck Phil. Can we call him Odd Turducken Phil?
Ooh.
P.S. And while I enjoyed reading your blog post, Sean, your ending has left the following stuck in my head.
That should have been our music last week.
Welcome back. Your dreams were your ticket out.
Thanks for that.
Welcome back. Same old place that you laughed about.
Can't play anymore. I don't know. I wasn't.
It's fair use.
Okay. All right, then. Well, let's let it run.
No. We need to move on. This is going to be a long show the way it is.
That's
well,
it for feedback.
Thank you, everybody, for sending your feedback. And on to our reviews.
Invasion of the Dinosaurs.
Oh, we have to do that one first.
Bum, bum,
that's
bum,
how we
bum,
do this.
Bum, 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 bum.
Returning to London, the Doctor and Sarah Jane find a city almost completely devoid of life. The civilian population has been evacuated in the wake of an unimaginable event. Somehow, dinosaurs have returned to terrorize the Earth. As the Brigadier and unit fend off increasingly vicious attacks from giant prehistoric reptiles, the Doctor investigates...
Don't laugh. You can get through this without laughing.
The Doctor investigates just how these monsters are appearing without warning. But when Sarah Jane is kidnapped, the Doctor realizes perhaps even his oldest friends can't be trusted. Who is responsible for the devastating carnage? And what will Sarah Jane do when she wakes aboard a spaceship many light years from home?
I can't give it the horn.
Give it a dun dun dun, but give it a small one.
Dun dun dun.
Oh. Vicious, very gigantic prehistoric
they were
reptile.
Vicious.
One was vicious.
Most of them were vicious.
And one was. Two were vicious.
One was a cow.
One was not gigantic. There were two.
I'm gonna do it.
There
dun, were two. Dun, dun.
It was
a big one, but I liked it.
I enjoyed it.
You moaned.
I did moan. I moaned over the fact that we went from plastic rubbery dinosaurs to really, really good dinosaurs in this one. And yeah.
You can't compare the two.
You can't. Really, that's why I was moaning.
It was apples and oranges.
It was more of one of those, this is what we had back then. But
And from the time, I thought it was really good. I thought it was really well done for the time frame. On television?
Stop motion dinosaurs would have been better.
Well
even.
I thought, especially when we watched, the first episode we watched was in black and white. And I thought the dinosaur had a very Harryhausen feel to it.
It did.
Until they added color. Then it lost a lot for me.
They don't look like the Munsters when they colorized them.
Yeah.
You remember that? You saw the Munsters on TV, and they were always in black and white. Oh, reruns, of course. We didn't see the Munsters when we were kids, but... in reruns. Right, not in their first run. And then they had that movie called Munster Go Home. And when the Munsters came on screen, they were green. Now, as a child, I would have been accepting...
Just the dad was green.
No!
All of them were? Okay, I don't remember this one. There was another one later. There were Grandpa and...
No, they were all green, Keith. You're remembering wrong. Because
I must be
they came on the screen, and I thought, oh, okay, well, that makes sense that Herman's green, because you always picture Frankenstein's monster as green, even though there's no proof that he was. Because the original Frankenstein movie was black and white.
Yeah, aside from promotional images of him being green.
Now, not even promotional images of Frankenstein, was he green back in the day. Oh, well, actually, I think
wasn't
the movie poster
posters?
Probably was. Yeah.
Isn't that where the green came from?
Anyway, regardless, but... The fact that Lily was green,
yeah,
and Grandpa was green, Eddie was green.
Lily was the mom, right?
Yes, Lily was the mom.
There was
no reason for that. You drew all over my notes, Sean. Trying to find this.
Yeah,
he's still trying to figure it out.
Sometimes emotion is not emotion; it's a highlighter.
Look, I fixed it.
But regardless,
the Munsters were not green.
The dinosaurs could have been better, but for the time, they were pretty good. I was pretty impressed by the Stegosaurus, the Brontosaurus, I thought was pretty good. The T-Rex had its moments. All of them were weak when they moved. Regardless, I think the weakest is the pterodactyls. The design and the look of the pterodactyls
I'm on board with Holly on this. I tried to look past the dinosaurs,
too.
And it worked for me for the most part.
Yeah,
because as Sean eloquently stated before, you can't come down on Doctor Who for the production,
especially in the 70s.
However, when we got to the pterodactyls on the beach, and they were clearly
they weren't on the beach.
Or not? I'm thinking of dinosaurs or friends. When they were attacking Pertwee
in the warehouse.
Thank you, in the warehouse. They were on a beach on the dinosaurs on the spaceship, weren't they? In the warehouse, they clearly looked like they were just hung from strings. Oh, and they were swinging them.
There's
at
a reason they were in a warehouse when they were being attacked.
Yeah, so that one was a little that was hard to imagine.
The rest I thought were pretty well done, and the story for the most part wasn't that bad. It was high concept, but...
It's high concept, but that's...
The problem is there's two different competing stories, and each would have filled three episodes apiece. Mixing the two didn't quite work as well as it should have.
I didn't see it as two different stories. I saw it as one big story that they were really not... driving home that they were being too broad focused on this big picture.
It just seems like the whole spaceship and this whole I forget what they called utopia or whatever they were going to call it just seemed so left field from the dinosaurs of why the dinosaurs are showing up. That I understand they're trying.
Well, it seems left field, but
later it makes sense.
I mean, it comes together.
They're trying to connect prehistoric time to take these people there. It just seems I don't know.
It's like starting over. It's like a clean slate type thing.
I understood what they were trying to do.
Yeah, I mean,
but how
that's
the dinosaurs
what I'm saying is there,
tied
there
into
weren't
it,
two stories going on. It was
it
there
felt
was,
like there was two stories.
Well, it's because it's that bait and switch. You think one thing's going on, and then you find out that this is part of a bigger story. And
you have to admit, when Sarah woke up on the spaceship and they said, oh, you've been here for 3 months.
Oh, you feel like it takes a left turn. Don't get me wrong. Yeah.
I mean, it was a big...
But it's a bait and switch. It's not that there were two stories happening.
And by the end of
it was
makes sense.
As soon as they revealed where Sarah was, and Sarah's starting to discover where she was, but they tied it right back into what was going on. So it wasn't...
Honestly, it wasn't until now that I understood why the dinosaurs were showing up because of what they were doing. I just now put the pieces together in my mind. I didn't get that while watching it.
Oh, okay.
That's why it felt like two separate stories. Okay. I don't think they explained why the dinosaurs were in the story.
I would agree that wasn't explained well. And if that's what I was saying, is they had this really grand story going on that I didn't feel like they were really pointing to what the story or the plot was well enough. I mean, you figure it out as you go along, but it just wasn't concise enough.
It mostly felt like two different conflicts of these dinosaurs showing up and we got to deal with them. And then we moved on to the spaceship
stuff.
Two
conflicts within the story, yeah.
And then later at the very end, they connected.
But that gave... No, it wasn't even at the very end. It was way earlier than that. But it gave Sarah something else to do while the doctor was doing something else. And I liked
and
that.
And I liked that,
that
aspect of
that.
It. I liked both. I liked the story. It just felt not as connected as it could have been.
Connected. I think disconnected, I would agree with you. Sean, you're not saying much.
Here's the deal. This is one of those episodes that is pretty universally lambasted by Who fandom.
Which I don't fully understand.
For the bad dinosaurs. That's what everybody comes down on. If you want to talk
poor
production value and shoddy shots and all that, everybody points to the story and says, look.
Just get past it, though.
And let's face it, we have it. We've got plastic dinosaurs. We've got Pertwee downstairs when they're closing doors and sets are literally the walls are shaking and different things like that. None of that matters to me.
No, I agree.
It really doesn't. Watching the... I mean, yes, the Tyrannosaurus was laughable. It was not a scary monster. It was not something that even as a kid I probably would have gone, huh. Now, I don't remember the tank and robot being that bad either until we went back and rewatched it. So
as a kid, it might not have
been. As a kid, maybe it's always...
Everything's
more impressive. But, you know, the dinosaur... And seeing this with people, this is actually my first time watching this story. I know this story only by reputation, which is bad. I mean, that's what everybody says. Oh, Invasion of Dinosaurs is not very good. And I didn't find it that way at all. I, like I said, all of the dinosaurs I thought were, and I think everybody on Friday Night Who kind of agreed with us, that it was not as bad as everybody made it out to be, and they were kind of quaint. I mean, yeah, they're not Jurassic Park, but we didn't come to expect that from this.
Right.
The plot is this very grandiose idea of... And apparently was later lifted for Terra Nova. That we're going to...
Sort of, yeah.
We're going to take people and send them back in time to restart society.
Right.
Okay. And we've got an ecology message going on with, you know, mercury in the fish and overpopulation. Okay, I can get behind that. I can, you know. And this is how we're going to do it. Okay. Now we're lying
with
to the people with this spaceship. Okay, that's a little out there, but still fits in with the...
Well, the idea is to make them think that
they're going to a new planet.
Right.
Now,
because if the realization of the fact that we just really kind of wiped everybody else out so that we could start this planet over, that's kind of hard to swallow. So tricking them with the spaceship makes sense.
All revolted at the end, too.
Right, exactly.
Here's the problem with this. The whole point... is we only want this select group of people to be teleported when we activate the time machine. When we flow the switch, we only want these people to be included. So we're going to empty London. So then there won't be any people there except for the ones of our choosing inside the fake spaceship. How do we empty London? Dinosaurs. We have a time machine. We'll go back and grab dinosaurs and bring them forward, and people will freak out and run away, and then we'll have the city to ourselves for this going back bit.
In hindsight, to me, it feels like they were trying to... They're working on their connection to go back, and accidentally pulled them forward and realized the harnessing of that and used it that way.
Yeah, I didn't get that.
They said it twice, yeah. that when they were asking about, well, will Una be taking, he says, well, we're on the peripheral, so probably not. Because of, I mean, they were very specific about the zone and the area, right, yeah, that this, right, the range that this thing had. Second problem, we've got all these people in hibernation locked up in the spaceship. So we've developed hibernation technology. I mean, we put them to sleep for 3 months. They've got it. I mean, I don't know if it's self-induced coma or what they did to these individuals that they made them believe they were going to sleep on this colony ship. So we've got the technology to do that. But we haven't really invented the time machine yet. We can do little things with it, like pull dinosaurs around, but it's not until we demonstrate with the coffee mug that we actually have made this thing work. So how long were you going to keep these people unconscious while you worked out the bugs on this? That seems like you put the cart before the horse in a big way there. You really kind of reverse engineered this wrong. Are you telling me, quite honestly, and now, okay, we needed the nuclear power generator for the source. Okay. I'll buy that for your reason for setting it in London. But you're telling me you couldn't have dismantled that and moved it out to the sticks and done all of this out in the middle of nowhere where nobody would have bothered you, nobody would have noticed, and you wouldn't have had to mess with dinosaurs? And then just all of a sudden, whoosh, you're in the past, and none of the rest of us would have known. You can't lay 60 miles of industrial cable from the nuclear generator out to where your compound is?
Well, not without any questions being asked.
It's easier,
yeah, exactly.
It's easier to bring dinosaurs from the past into the future. That's the problem with this plot, is that it's these nifty ideas in very wide-ranging scope, and none of it gels together. None of it makes any sense for why you would go from A to B to C to D to get there.
Yeah.
That's really stretching the credibility for me on this. We get a lot of little things. We get the Whomobile, which I was all excited because I'd never seen it. I'd seen pictures of it, but I'd never seen any of the episodes that it featured in. And
which
we got
is
it.
The only one.
And then I started doing the math, going, hey, wait a minute. We've had Time War previously. Then this one is the intro, and then Death to the Daleks, and then Peladon, and then Planet of the Spiders. When does this thing get used again? Apparently that was it.
Yeah. As far as I know.
Bessie
I
is more of a Whomobile than this thing.
I don't remember any more of those.
Bessie is much more. The Whomobile.
Yeah, for me, it definitely will be.
It's been featured more.
Well, the Whomobile was always kind of a foreign concept. I would see pictures of this thing and go, that's really strange for Doctor Who. I mean, that's out there. It's this weird hovercraft spaceship thing.
I'll tell you, this was my first viewing of the episode or the story in its entirety. I, years ago, saw clips on YouTube from this episode. In fact, that's where I saw the Whomobile for the first time, but I didn't think about this until John brought it up the other night. I also read the novelization of this several years ago.
Mm.
And he's right. There was no Whomobile in that. It was a motorcycle. The Doctor was riding on the back of a motorcycle in that one. And so that was like, he said that. And it's just, that's totally better than a motorcycle. And I was like, that's right. It was a motorcycle in
the
book.
Featured on the cover.
Exactly. Yeah, oh, it is down there. I didn't see it down there. I hadn't done it. But, yeah, no, I had seen – this was back when I was rediscovering Who in the 90s and the late 90s, and I was finding clips on little-known websites that I'm not even sure are out there anymore. And there was one episode of this out there that I watched. And, of course, having read the novelization, it wasn't – I mean, it was more of a, okay, well, this is what it looked like. But, yeah, this was the first time that I've actually seen the story from the beginning to the end. But I knew the story from the novel. So I don't have the issues with those. I think you nitpick some of these things about, well, why would they do this when they do this? Again, it's Doctor Who. I mean, you got to look at it from the sense that you wouldn't have a story. You wouldn't have something for the Doctor to be preoccupied with trying to figure out, number one, why these dinosaurs are in present day. That's one of those wow factors. Hey, there are dinosaurs in present day London.
Well, that's just and it. This is where, in a way, I agree with Keith. Because if you did a story, if the whole crux of this had come down to the scientist was insane... Or, well, he was anyway, but I mean, if he was...
then it justifies the fact that they're bringing the judges in there.
He was just doing it for fun as opposed to purpose.
No, that's just it. If he was doing it for fun, I've got no problem with it.
Yeah.
Because it's just one of those offbeat, oddball ideas that Doctor Who would embrace and go with. If the idea was to create this golden age on Earth,
which
presently, and in some way that bringing back the dinosaurs was going to help facilitate,
which makes
that,
me wonder if I that's the direction they were originally going.
But to bring dinosaurs forward to empty London so that you could then go back because you didn't want anybody around.
And really,
that seems
they're using this nuclear generator to power this device. Couldn't they just say nuclear generator went on meltdown and we got to evacuate the city?
Yeah, I can think of a gas leak, a poison.
There's lots of reasons
I can think
to get
of
them
a billion
out of the city.
Different thing. An environmental crisis. You know, we found mercury in the
yeah,
sewers.
Yeah, but you
I can
know
think
what?
Of a billion reasons more plausible
no,
than
no,
dinosaur.
No. I got an explanation for this, guys. I got an explanation. If you did any number of those things that you just mentioned, you would still have those. What we call in America rednecks that stand back and go, I'm not worried about no mercury leak. I'm going to stay here. This is my house. This is my. If a T Rex materialized in your front yard,
there was,
redneck or not, you're
still
bailing
people.
Out of that
no.
town.
Rednecks.
You're
sorry,
going.
Rednecks are people
they're
that
running.
Would stay.
No.
If a hurricane isn't going to stop somebody,
yeah.
there were people staying. There were looters.
Yeah,
that's true. There were some looters.
People were still staying.
Why are we?
My
we're going
point
to build
is,
a grand
yeah.
society, but we've got the criminals.
But
because
have
they
had,
didn't get out.
You would have
got
had,
Arkham City.
You'd have had a larger number of people staying back, saying, "Well, that's no big deal. I can ride that out." But when dinosaurs are looking in your windows and at night, you know, I don't know if I can sleep here. You're believing. I'm sorry. That's a legitimate reason to get out of town. You tell me if a dinosaur walked up to your apartment right now
depending
and looked
on
in the
dinosaur.
Window,
yeah.
See, that's no, it's a T-Rex. It's looking
okay,
in your
if
front
it's a
door.
T-Rex.
Are you going to stay here?
But they were bringing
no,
Brontosaurus and Stegosaurus
out of here.
In.
Well, yeah, they're
I wouldn't have been afraid of those
defending
two.
Defending their choices of dinosaurs.
I'm just saying, not all of them. Probably wasn't a T-Rex for everybody that saw them.
I don't know. If the T-Rex from Jurassic Park showed up, I'd have left. If this T-Rex had shown up, I might have laughed
well,
at
look,
it.
Look, his legs don't move.
Until it backed slowly around the corner.
They can back up? What?
I don't know. I just, like I said, I don't feel like I'm being nitpicky. I feel like this is a fairly big fundamental
no.
flaw with this, but maybe not. Like
at
I said, I'm willing to overlook the dinosaurs. I'm willing to overlook the wobbly
We're nitpicking
sets.
Things that fans don't. Most fans are nitpicking this. The
you're
production.
Nitpicking the things that people that fans should be producing.
Yeah, there we go.
Yes.
I'll
I will
that.
Give you that. If you're saying that in a sense of this one gets a bad rap because of the wrong reasons, then
yes.
I'll buy that.
Yeah, I definitely think it gets a bad. I don't think. Like
I don't think this deserves a bad rap. There are flaws with it, but
there
it's an
are some
enjoyable
really
story.
Big flaws. It's still an enjoyable story. It was still an enjoyable romp. It was still one that I liked. I can't give it a big ba-da because it didn't have. It had too many little problems that just didn't make it gel for me.
You know what made me overlook all of the flaws with this entire show?
Sergeant Benton?
Sergeant Benton. Brigadier. The
Brigadier
was fantastic in this. Now he got
he
did
wasn't
get
as
shut
good
down.
As Benton.
He got shut down a lot of times, but the Brigadier still, man, you could tell he had the doctor's back the whole time.
Well,
I love that.
And the Brig was the one giving Benton kind of the okay to go do what you really
exactly.
need to do.
Exactly. It was fantastic. I thought Pertwee and Sarah Jane were both fantastic in this.
Well,
they did
and that's
wonderful.
What, that's what elevates the story
acting.
So
yeah.
high is
wonderfully
those four
acting.
Characters and then the conflict with Yates.
Yeah, and then Yates, you just, which I knew was coming. In fact, I was kind of foreshadowing a little bit that night on Twitter about, well, you're acting very suspicious, Captain
well,
Yates.
Yeah.
You know,
didn't
funny.
They make reference later
it,
in an
so.
Episode about Yates and this whole issue?
Yeah.
Because I remember hearing that.
They do, yeah.
What's funny is that I purposely avoided a lot of the end of the unit stories because I knew that, well, Yates turned traitor, basically. But I didn't know when. And I didn't want Keith to be exposed to that until we'd gotten a little bit more Mike Yates under,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah.
under his
yeah.
belt, so to speak.
I still don't feel like I have enough. But
I don't
lot.
Either.
We still haven't done a lot. He's really not a lot.
He's
in the demons. Or the demons.
The demons.
As Sean fondly says. I think he's in another. No, we're done with Pertwee. I think that's it.
He's
demons might be it.
Well, isn't he with Liz in
some early
Ambassadors of Death and
oh yeah, I'm sure he is.
The Invasion. Of course, he won't be Mike Gates in the Invasion. He'll be
not in the Invasion.
At any rate, I purposely didn't want to put this one on the schedule until we came up with this great idea. Let's do dinosaurs. Oh yeah, that'll be great. And then Mike is there and he's reporting into the, which that was the other thing that kind of threw me is that I would have expected
we gave him enough Mike Yates though. Well, he's
it's not as big a deal as some of the other things that are coming up. But,
you know, it's not like if Benton went bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
I won't believe it.
I mean, this is kind of the same as spoilers for the non-Trekkies out there. But this is kind of the same thing as when Savick was revealed to be not such a... Or it wasn't Savick. It was going to be Savick. But instead they brought in the other one, which was a dead giveaway. Right, it would have been much more big deal if Savick had turned out to be the bad guy in Star Trek VI.
Yes, absolutely.
Because these characters, they're peripheral, but they've kind of reached that favored nation status where you like them because they're peripheral and they keep coming back in and being those supporting characters. It would be the ooh.
for the record, he was in Terror of the Autons, Mind of Evil, Claws of Axos, The Daemons, Day of the Daleks, Time Monster, Green Death, Invasion of the Dinosaurs, Planet of the Spiders.
He's seen almost all of those.
No, he hasn't. He's only seen like three of those.
No.
I've seen Terror of the Autons, Claws of Axos, Day of the Daleks, Invasion of the Dinosaurs. I haven't seen Time Monster.
But that's four out of the six, or eight.
Nine.
He's seen half of them. Oh, is there nine? Is that nine?
I think nine.
You haven't seen The Green Death. You haven't seen...
Well, let me count.
Planet of Spiders.
He hasn't seen Daemons.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Demons.
7, 8. Demons. Yeah, there's 9.
He hasn't seen Matt Damon. Oh.
So he's seen.
He was in Dimensions of Time.
He's seen 4 hours of Time, I guess. Yeah, he was in Dimensions of Time.
And the cameo in The Five Doctors.
Yeah, and a lot of people had issues with that because it didn't work. But at any rate.
No, it's fine there. Well, no, it doesn't.
Yeah, it doesn't work. There either. But.
Nothing in Dimensions and Time makes it worse.
Why are we
debating
that?
I'm not
going
to try to defend that.
Like I said, it would be the equivalent of finding out that Moneypenny was passing secrets on.
Yeah, no, I agree.
It's
I
that
agree.
Kind of level of...
No,
of
any, just anybody cow. With you in general. Unless it was a no-name you'd never met before.
Yeah, then they're automatically suspect. So I admire that they took that risk with the storytelling.
Yes.
Yeah. And I'm glad... No offense, Mike... I'm glad that it was Yates and not Benton, because Benton is the man. Every step of the way in this episode, he illustrates why he's such a cool character.
Although Android Benton kind of throws you for a loop there.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but then you realize he's an android.
Right,
so.
Right.
But when he, you know, when he's flat out telling him, I guess you better start, using your Venusian Aikido on me. And he cringes because he's waiting for the blow. Hadn't you better overpower me so that you can get where you need to be?
Oh. And then he just does the Vulcan pinch.
Yeah, and then explaining it to the Brigleader. He overpowered me. Where was everybody else? I sent them to go prepare a cell. He'll be court-martialed for this. The Brig looks at him after the guy leaves. And he's like, well, go on. Go court-martial yourself.
You better go arrest yourself.
Yeah, better go arrest yourself. Go get that taken care of.
On, Benton. Go rest yourself.
And when, you know, the guy's standing there, oh, we're packing up, we're being evacuated, and because of this, that, and the other thing. And Benton just kind of shakes his head, grabs the radio, takes it away from him, and goes back and plugs it back in. Doesn't say anything. Just does it. And then he gets to punch out the general, which we were all waiting for that to happen. I didn't care who did it, as long as somebody did it. So good in this.
Which, and I always liked Benton in all the stories, but not without any reason. He just seemed likable. This gives you reason to love him.
No, absolutely. Yeah. He's just a teddy bear and everything else.
He is equal to the Brig in my eyes
now.
He's
just a teddy bear and everything else.
I'd agree. They're part and parcel. And it's weird when you get one without the other. Because there's a couple that, for whatever reason, Benton's not in, I think.
Uh-huh.
That the Brig shows up. And then I think there's one or two that Benton's in.
That Yates is not in, right.
That the Brig isn't. Well, like in
Android. Absolutely, yeah.
And it just feels
Android,
there's that missing component that one of them's there and the other isn't.
Yates was higher rank than Benton, right?
Which is funny because we just saw...
Which it just feels so much like Benton is the Brig's second more than anybody else.
Yeah.
Especially in this story.
Yeah.
Which is weird, Spine considering we just watched this last week when in Day of the Daleks, when Joe comes out with the wine and cheese to feed Benton.
Yeah.
And Yates is the one that interrupts him, and he's like, hadn't you better go guard the perimeter or something? And Benton goes running off. And then he eats it, so he's a bad guy there, too. But, yeah.
I just think he deserves a promotion.
Well, he probably gets one in...
He gets one eventually, but...
He goes up to staff sergeant or something. I don't remember which one it's in. We've seen it.
He deserves higher than sergeant.
Yeah.
No, he went from, in Robot, he went from sergeant to...
Corporal.
No.
Colonel.
No. It's...
Is it a C?
It's still, it's like first sergeant or something. It's like a...
Staff sergeant.
Staff, no, it's, I don't think
staff
it was
staff sergeant.
Staff
is lower
sergeant.
Than sergeant, isn't it?
I don't think it was staff sergeant. I think it was...
Hold on, I'm Wikipedia-ing.
Well, while you're Wikipedia-ing that, I'll throw out a couple of nuggets from Wikipedia's page on Invasion, because it's the source of all knowledge.
Yeah.
Glenn, in his own novelization, Malcolm Hoop,
Hulk,
made no reference to the Whomobile.
Yep.
In the novel, the Doctor uses a military motorbike with electronic scanning equipment attached, as in the original scripts.
You didn't need Wiki for that.
The Whomobile was a prop contributed to the production at a late stage... by John Pertwee.
Ah. So he already owned it.
Which, and you mentioned during Friday Night Who that you heard stories of him just getting this thing out and driving it around.
He would literally just take it out
on the
roads.
And I really hope he went out in costume.
And,
as the Doctor.
He would take it out on the roads of London and just get people to stare at it. And eventually got to the point where he's like, I don't need this anymore. And a fan apparently approached him about it. And so he sold it to the fan for a very minuscule amount of money. Under the condition that he could still take it out and drive it when he wanted to. And what is the guy going to do? No, Pertwee, you can't drive it. He said, of course he can. So he would go over to the guy's house and go, hey, can I take the Whomobile out for a spin? And the guy would let him drive it.
Benton was promoted to the rank of Warrant Officer Class 1.
That's what it was, Warrant Officer.
Holding the post of Regimental Sergeant Major.
Right. Because Sergeant Major, that's what I was thinking of too. Because
we should remember that from the
movie. He couldn't.
Why start now?
He couldn't be an officer because he wasn't an officer. So it was he couldn't be.
What?
He couldn't be elevated to the technical officer staff. So that's like the highest rank you can get, being a serviceman instead of an officer.
Okay.
That was the point.
That makes sense.
He couldn't be Captain Benton, I guess, was the point. And so they elevated him to the highest point, level he could without being an officer. So,
and still well-deserved.
Right.
Now, one other thing that I thought was really interesting that I found on this, and something that kind of surprised us, is when it came up, the first episode in black and white was titled Invasion, which obviously is the title of this old Patrick Troughton serial. There's a lot of people that, and I don't know how much of this has been retconned, if you will, by fandom, but there's a lot of people that think that the reason episode one was white and none of the other episodes were white is because the mistaken title. They apparently changed the title because they didn't want to give away that there were dinosaurs in the story.
Until the cliffhanger.
And then the next one that came out was actually titled Invasion of the Dinosaurs. But a lot of fans are of the belief that when the BBC went through the archives and started junking stuff, they saw Invasion and thought it was the Troughton one and that they didn't need to hold on to. And that's why that it was wiped. Now, there's no proof of that.
Yeah.
As far as the BBC's, and again, this is according to Wiki, as far as the BBC is concerned, the story had been wiped in its entirety. Because researchers for the 1976 documentary Who's Doctor Who found that none of these episodes were even in existence in the BBC library. They found them later in other places.
Right.
So
the card catalog was wrong.
Yeah, basically. But I thought that was kind of an interesting one.
Which, how ironic is it that it starts with Invasion, or it was just called Invasion, and the Invasion is Benton's first episode.
Oh, yeah.
I hadn't thought of that. You're right.
He was a corporal.
He was a corporal then.
Very good.
There's the C word.
From,
yeah. And of course, right. Peter Miles. I have to talk briefly about Mr. Peter Miles.
Yep,
we saw him in Doctor Who and the Silurians, and later in Genesis of the Daleks. Because I saw Genesis of the Daleks first, the man will forever be Niter.
Yep.
Niter. But he played the crazy scientist here.
Professor Whittaker.
That's all I had. Anything else you guys want to talk about with Invasion of the Dinosaurs?
No, let's move on to Dinosaurs on a Spaceship.
We don't have synopses for these.
No, we don't need one.
This was so much fun.
I could go to my season pass on...
Was there a prequel for this one?
No, there wasn't.
Would you like a synopsis? Dinosaurs on a spaceship!
Did you guys... I went into it expecting the quality of story of Snakes on a Plane. So I was... How can you not expect something like that?
I still have yet to see Snakes on a Plane.
Really? I got it on Blu-ray if you want to borrow it.
I don't really care to
see
it.
Oh, you need to see it.
Having seen Dinosaurs on a Spaceship, Snakes on a Plane will probably be a letdown for you.
Yeah, that's true. Because there is so much more in this story than I ever imagined. And there's so much fun in this story.
There it is. Ready? I do. They have a synopsis on the season pass.
BBC announced synopses. We just didn't read them last week.
An unmanned spaceship hurtles towards certain destruction unless the Doctor can save it and its impossible cargo of dinosaurs. By his side, a ragtag gang of adventurers, a big game hunter, an Egyptian queen, and a surprised member of the Pond family. But little does the Doctor know, there is someone else on board who will stop at nothing to keep a hold of his precious prehistoric cargo.
Dun, dun, dun!
We all, switched roles this week.
We did.
This one because Sean left. Keith, what did you think of this
This
one?
Was so I, much I fun. It is a lot. It wasn't groundbreaking. It wasn't mind-bending. It was just fun. With some heaviness to it, too. I did not expect the Silurian stuff in this story. I loved the idea that this was an arc for the Silurians going off to find a new planet. When it couldn't, it came back to Earth. That was so cool. I loved Rory's dad. He had almost a Wilfred role in this, almost as lovable. A little bit more awkward, but just as lovable, I thought.
Okay.
From his golf balls to his trowel. He had so many great moments. And yeah, I agree with Dr. Phil. It would have been interesting, and it would have been compelling to have some conflict between him and Rory.
See, but that, to me, that
wasn't
been,
necessary.
To me, that would have been cliche.
It would have been forced.
Yeah, we've seen that before. You put the father and the son together, and you always get that. You know, they just don't understand each other. There's always that conflict. They have a little bit of that here.
He complains about
his dad, but it was subtle enough, and I didn't have a problem
and
with that.
Rory
at all.
Pulling out his med kit to fix his dad was great.
Didn't that feel like that's where they were going with that? Is because did you actually just pull out a trowel? Yeah, well, with you, it's a shovel. With me, it's a med kit. I've got this. You actually get to see my nursing skills in action.
And that's all you need.
I kind of braced myself for here it comes.
It wasn't
heavy handed. You've never approved of me being a nurse.
Oh no, no, no. See, no, I didn't see that coming.
They didn't go in.
No, in fact, his dad's face lights up because he realizes how much like him he is.
Yeah.
I liked that. That was really cool. No, I didn't feel they were going there. I felt they were going there with that whole conflict that dad, said, this is how we do things and blah, blah, blah. I thought that was going to be coming.
I didn't quite understand why they had him over.
I'm glad it didn't.
I'm glad it didn't go that way either. I didn't quite understand why he was there changing the light bulb.
He was fixing a fixture.
Yeah.
Remember, he said the fixture needed to be replaced.
Okay.
And Lori said, no, it doesn't.
Yeah.
I also found it interesting.
And then later he said, he's right. He's right. The fixture's bad.
And I find it interesting that it's been 10 months since the doctors picked up Amy or Rory.
Yeah.
And then at the end, them saying, okay, we're ready to go home for a couple more months.
Right, right.
That shows how much they've grown as a couple and as characters, especially for Amy.
Yeah.
While she was jealous that Nefertiti and Lestat maybe... I'm sorry, he's going to be Lestat. I don't care if he's a big game hunter from 1907. But
what'd you guys think of that? I mean, did it seem random that we pulled Nefertiti and this... Oh, what was the guy's name? I don't know.
John Riddell.
Well, he was... I'm sure he's some historical figure.
Well, interestingly enough, that's what I did the research on, because I thought, surely they wouldn't have just pulled... Because they made it feel like he was somebody important.
Well, don't tell me you researched him on Wiki.
No. I researched them on Google.
Oh.
But the only John Riddell of note that kind of sort of fits the criteria we've been given does have a wiki page.
Is it a picture of him?
1807 to 1865. So dates
not the right time
don't quite line up. He was a science lecturer, botanist,
science lecturer,
geologist, medical doctor, chemist,
And
apparently was something to do with inventing the microscope.
Big game hunter?
No.
No.
Nor archaeology.
That doesn't count.
And published a science fiction story giving an account of a former student who traveled to the moon and Mars. That's the closest that I can find. Yeah. That is the closest.
Well, okay, that makes it even more random that they threw this guy in this story.
No, I've never heard of you.
Now, maybe it's true. Maybe we're making mountains out of molehills. Maybe it's just a complete coincidence and it's just John Riddell's a made-up character.
I think that's what it is.
You pair random no-name character with
Queen
Nefertiti, and then all of a sudden I'm thinking this is something historical. Now, Queen Nefertiti, by the way, did in fact vanish
from
history, which I did not
know.
Well, she was presumed dead.
Presumed dead.
Right after her wedding? Wasn't that when that was?
I believe it. No, well.
Isn't that when he picked her up, though? Or shortly after her wedding, after he saved the day?
Is that when he picked her up? I had the impression that they were married for a while because he said, she said, she called him the,
maybe that's true.
She called him the, walking sleeping pill or something to that effect,
Ankhenaten, who was the husband, about year 14 of his reign, Nefertiti vanishes from historical record. There's no word from her after that date. Theories include sudden death by plague, that was sweeping the story.
Which,
that was a nice inclusion to the story about the... I wouldn't mind seeing that story set in ancient Egypt and alien locusts coming and plaguing. Right. That would be kind of cool.
That would be cool.
Might actually be cooler than... No, I'm not going to... Well, it might be cooler than the dinosaurs on a spaceship, but I'll get to that. I'm hung up on the idea that we got John Riddell, big game hunter, and Queen Nefertiti. And it's random. It's very random that these people
are
there.
It is a little random.
The fact that the doctor needs a gang, or felt like he wanted one.
Well, that's what it boils down to.
He wanted a gang.
It feels like the writer, this Chris Chimbal,
who also wrote Pond Life.
Right. It feels like he was just introducing the idea of the Scooby Gang or the the Doctor's Gang, is what he was looking for. And it was just like he picked
he wanted
Nefertiti
to continue
makes
that
sense
feel
because
from...
she did disappear from history. So it was a neat way to say, okay, this might be the reason why it happened. But then to throw this random big game hunter in there that has no historical background, I hope somebody can find something.
And no
more
reason
than
why
Sean did on
the
this,
doctor
but,
would take him. I mean, it makes sense that he's there once they discover there's
he
dinosaurs.
Says he's there because he owes him a favor.
But just to have the character in general, it doesn't make sense until you know there's dinosaurs.
Right, exactly.
And then you need a big game hunter.
Then it's a little too convenient.
Then
you
need what's his face from Jurassic Park.
I think that's what he was for. He was supposed to be the Robert Muldoon character.
Yes,
Muldoon.
But the problem is,
or Roland from
Lost World. We didn't go into this knowing there were going to be dinosaurs.
That's right. It just happens.
It's a convenience.
It really to
is.
Be there.
Anyway, that was my only gripe with this.
Character was very entertaining.
I had a lot of fun with this episode. I felt that Amy was played differently this time.
Yes.
Was a lot of fun.
A lot lighter.
Amy was channeling Zoe in this episode.
Bit.
Being able to figure things out, pushing buttons, been going with the doctor. And then putting the little data orb in there and figuring that out, I thought that was actually pretty cool. Because you got the impression that she's just been watching the doctor enough to realize this is what you do when you enter.
This is how you figure things out.
Situation with
the doctor. And what a great person to discover the Silurian story arc of it.
Yes, absolutely.
Especially considering her with this summit in the fifth season.
Yeah, I'm with Keith on the fact that I like the idea that it's a Silurian ship. It's going away, and then its first instinct is to return after the genocide happens, and so that's why it's coming back. I like the idea of Earth, being their naive selves, and something's plummeting towards the Earth, we'll just shoot it out of the sky.
Destroy it.
I love that fact. I actually liked the pirate. I liked the guy that Filch was playing. I thought that was fantastic. I mean, it was a great character. It was a typical character, but it wasn't. He wasn't as piratey as he could have been. I mean, you could have taken.
He was much more menacing.
Yeah, you could have taken the character in and just done the cliche pirate, but he was really just this menacing character that I thought I liked.
And it was considering where we've been in season 6 and 5 and most of new series, the fact that he didn't know who the Doctor was, I think sets up a very interesting theme.
Well, him
not
knowing the Doctor, and then the little scan he does on them coming back
and not recognizing.
Yeah, we're seeing the little thread there.
That's
now.
The thread. Yep. It's the lack of recognition, the forgetting.
Absolutely loved Roy's father as well. Oh. I thought Arthur.
And what
Weasley
perfect,
did a great job.
What perfect casting for Brian Williams.
Oh, he looks great.
He looks fantastic. They look like they could be father and son.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, totally. And I love that he said they called him a pawn. Yes, I'm not a pawn. Yes, you are.
And then him fighting off the robots with the trowel.
Yeah,
was
that was
so
fantastic. Just
hilarious.
Having the trowel when he says,
just
we need to dig.
Was cool.
Roy's like, well, what do we dig with? And he's already pulling his trowel out.
And he's so desperate at that point. We've gone.
He's trying to wrap his brain around everything, the box,
the materialization, bigger on the inside, time travel, spaceship, dinosaurs.
Thank you, Arthur C. Clarke. Of course.
Beach. On Earth.
Beach. Earth. Dig.
There's a floor.
You know, just you two dig. And he's like, I can do that. He just latches on single-mindedly with that idea. I can fix that. Dig, 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 dig. And then the floor shows up. And it all falls apart for him again. He's just
whole,
like, oh,
the
no.
Whole, well, everybody should have a trowel. Put it on your Christmas list. Dad, I'm an adult. I don't have a Christmas list. And the Doctor's going, I do.
Which, interesting, maybe not interestingly, but just something I happened to notice. That's the second Christmas reference. Because he makes one in Asylum of the Daleks when he's parading around the Parliament going, you finally got me. It's Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
do you think they're foreshadowing the Christmas episode, maybe?
I wonder.
Huh? Mm-hmm. That's a good point. Good point.
The Doctor says, and maybe that's just a Moffat thing, because the Doctor said Christmas in an earlier episode last season, too, when he was going on about explosions and death. And he says, somebody's been reading my Christmas list. Yeah, he got all kinds of excited.
Right.
But,
it seems like since...
He does have a Christmas list.
Yeah.
He's got a Christmas fetish.
It seems like Christmas Carol, it's obvious that, especially this regeneration of the Doctor, loves Christmas.
Yeah. He's very, very into it.
I love the robots. When they first came on screen in the trailer, I thought, oh, that just looks real hokey. Then they come on screen in this, and I was like, well, that's... I like these guys. That's kind of cool.
Totally channeling Douglas Adams in this story.
Oh, yeah. It's very typical of a Douglas
a very
Adams.
Almost Marvin
yeah,
robot. Type character.
Well,
robots.
No.
Well, maybe not Marvin, but...
Typical of the type of robots you find in the Hitchhiker's
yes.
Galaxy.
Yes,
yes. Absolutely. Absolutely.
They were very enjoyable.
Yeah.
From a design standpoint, did anybody else get reminded of Fifth Element?
A little bit.
Yeah. The kind of shape of them, and then they kind of had the spindly fingers. They remind me of the one aliens from that.
Would agree.
Yeah. I like the riding the Triceratops. That was very cool. How do you start a Triceratops? How do you start this thing?
Was bothered by the one side shot of the three of them on the back riding the Triceratops used twice. It's almost exactly the same shot.
I didn't catch that either.
Exactly the same. But I thought the dinosaurs looked fantastic in this.
They did.
I didn't have any problem with them.
I was impressed by the variety. The fact that what were they called?
Ankylosaurs.
Ankylosaurs showed up. That was the first one.
Ankylosaurus.
Yeah. Ankylosaurus. That was very cool. That's not a dinosaur you see very often in media.
Right. You're right.
And then we get to the Triceratops and then...
The baby T-Rex.
And then the Velociraptors.
Yeah.
Which I was really worried that the Velociraptors were going to play a huge role in this story and it was going to kind of de-evolve into Jurassic Park on a spaceship.
Right.
I was very pleased to find out it wasn't.
Yeah.
And I liked the fact that the Velociraptors took the role of heavy. That's the force that's trying to get them at the end. as opposed to a T-Rex.
Right.
We never saw, other than the baby, we never saw a T-Rex, which I'm you know what, I'm okay with that, because I think T-Rex is overused.
Yeah, it is overused.
And apparently, just like Invasion of the Dinosaurs, the T-Rex snores.
I think Velociraptors are overused, too.
I think so, too.
But they were subtly used here, too. Even though they were the heavy and that they had to contend with at the end, there wasn't a lot of...
Which was a great scene.
There wasn't
scene
a lot
with,
of rest.
Well, yeah, it just made sense from the fact that they needed a pack.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Okay, we'll go to the vet. But because they weren't in it for any... It's not like they were being stalked through the ship for
right,
the whole thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, they just show up.
Just happens.
They show up at the end,
and there's a reference a little bit before when they enter that room.
Yeah,
and that entire thing with Amy and Rydell was fantastic. The fact that Rydell didn't believe or isn't gender equality at all because the time frame he's from, and then totally accepts Amy by the end of it.
Well, I love the fact that
and they're fighting
a woman by my side, a gun in my hand, and yeah, I mean, it's just, that was so cool. What a wonderful line.
He may have been cliche, but he was enjoyable,
absolutely.
And I give a lot of credit to that actor.
Yeah.
Now, I don't want to give the impression that I didn't like this. I said I didn't know how to feel about it. I've seen it twice now, and there's a part of me that still doesn't know how to feel about it. It was, as I think many people are going to label it, a very enjoyable romp.
That's what that's label for it is.
That's all it is.
I walked out of Asylum of the Daleks going, wow, that was an incredible episode. I loved that from start to finish. Doctor Who is back. That was a lot of fun, and it was really, really, not a mind-blowing episode, but just a really well-done episode. This one, I got done with it, and I went, well, that was a lot of fun.
It had its a couple
this
of heavy moments.
It was a lot of fun.
It had it. It had
this
its
was
heavy
a lot
moments
of fun
with the Silurians.
That was it.
there's.
I thought the foreshadowing with Amy was really interesting too.
There's nothing wrong with having fun for fun's sake,
and it still feels cinematic. I'll give them that.
It still feels cinematic.
It feels like Snakes on a Plane.
There's nothing wrong with doing
slightly
an episode
better
that's fun just for the sake of doing an episode that's fun.
Well,
I have
it's
zero.
It's kind of like The Lodger and Closing Time.
Exactly.
There's the heavy moments in it, but for the most part, it's fun. It's a sitcom.
And I've had other people that I've seen have referred to Curse of the Black Spot, or as Dr. Phil called it, Curse of the Black Bad Plot, which I still think that one gets a bad rap.
On second viewing, it's not as bad as first. This one, I think, is much more enjoyable.
Well, it just... I still blame Curse of the Black Spot's problem on falling where it does in the schedule. That we've got such
so
a mind-blowing, twisty, timey-wimey, two-part, heavy plot episode.
But you also...
And then we go to this. Whereas this comes off of Asylum of the Daleks, which is also a big, heavy... But that one didn't aim to set up an overall story arc.
Which, and knowing what this episode's called from the get-go, Dinosaurs on a Spaceship, it's kind of like a, okay, that's where we're going.
Well, and I think the other thing you have to understand is, I think they're doing this season right, because in the sense that this really goes to where we were hoping it would go, where each episode feels very standalone.
Yes.
That's why it doesn't get that. You know, you were saying it doesn't follow something that sets up the big
story
arc for the entire season.
Well, I think that's why a lot of people didn't like Curse of
the
Black Spot.
We came off the ground with this one just as a one-off, and then another one-off, and then hopefully another one-off, and then another one-off, and then hopefully when Amy leaves, there will have been hints, but nothing that was obvious to us coming along.
Of course... Although, it probably will be decently obvious to those paying attention, because we know Amy's leaving. For those not going into it not knowing that Amy's leaving, I don't think it would be obvious.
Yeah.
But going into it knowing, and especially this exchange, I'll be there till the death of you, or vice versa.
Yeah.
And, ooh, yeah.
I loved pretty much all the same thing that you guys did. I loved Rose's dad. I loved the kidnapping him accidentally. You know.
And then blame, what did you think you are sneaking onto my ship?
And then chastising Rory as my dad. Why did you bring him?
I didn't. You
paralyzed
around
twice. You know,
welcome.
That was just fantastic. Solomon. You mentioned that, you know, he could have been very piratey. This guy, and I'm really kind of surprised that none of the feedback that we got, other than Odd Turducken Phil, did anybody comment on the kind of dark turn that the Doctor takes? Because after the first time that I watched it, I looked at Mel and I said, all right, so I'm kind of torn on whether or not I think it was okay for the doctor to leave this guy to his own devices. There was a part of me that felt that was very out of character and very harsh. But there was another part of me that thought back to the idea that not only did Solomon kill the Silurians on the spaceship, he woke them up first, then chucked them out the airlock.
Right.
And it's
this guy got exactly what he deserved. Yeah.
It's
in fact,
almost
he got off
a
easy.
Step forward from what happened in the last episode of him setting the Dalek to self-destruct and go in reverse. It's just the next big step. There's a darkness in this doctor that we're beginning to see in general.
This is also the doctor that, although he took down an entire army of God without firing a shot, also, to get a point across to Cybermen, blew up an entire fleet of Cybermen. Now, you can argue that Cybermen are too far along to convert back and that
he's
really
doing him a favor.
Exactly. Yeah. But on the flip side of that, he had no sort of remorse or second thought about doing that either. So
we didn't see the doctor's reaction to doing that.
Well, that's
true. We only
saw
Rory.
But,
maybe he talked Rory into doing it.
Ironically enough, when I saw that happen, when I saw that scene playing out, I thought, well, Hoodlum fandom's going to be up in arms over the fact that he did that without even batting an eye.
Yeah.
That was my first thought. My second thought was, I would have done the exact same thing, and I
don't
blame the guy. That was perfect.
Which, and Amy, granted, from the trailers, we've heard Amy talk about this is what happens when you travel alone too much. And it's been 10 months traveling alone.
Am I crazy? And maybe I think I'm crossing this. Never mind. Holly and I just watched God Complex, and it was in there while she was telling the other doctor, the Indian gal, that they travel with him because he doesn't realize that he shouldn't be alone or can't be alone or something to that effect. I was thinking it was in this one because I'd watched them both today. But I think that's still the idea is that Amy recognizes
it's the continuation from Waters of Mars.
Yeah, exactly.
It really is.
It really is.
Which I love that they're continuing that idea.
They also meant Christian Bale did a wonderful thing for me by adding that moment of heavy when they discover that it is a Silurian ship. Because all of a sudden this went from being a ridiculous episode, a fun episode, but a ridiculous episode, a ridiculous premise.
It took the premise and made it real.
A ridiculous concept, and all of a sudden gave us a valid, plausible
reason for all
okay,
of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not that I wouldn't have been on board anyway,
but
this is why the engines are tidal waves.
Yeah.
I mean, it all the pieces connect.
This is why there are dinosaurs.
Yeah. This is why there are dinosaurs on the spaceship.
The spaceship.
Suddenly, everything about this impossible situation made sense just by tying into the Silurian. And it was like, oh, genius. Yeah.
I paused as soon as I saw that.
I like the idea that not only did some of them retreat to underground, some of them went off to colonize other planets.
And it makes me wonder how many other arcs are there.
Now, this is one of the things that I do, and maybe I'm showing my own lack of knowledge here. They comment several times on the idea that Solomon committed genocide.
Well,
but
to his mind, as far as Solomon's aware, he committed genocide.
But the doctor's the one that calls him out on it. You committed genocide. You did this. You're
well,
out here
from Solomon's point of view, Solomon wouldn't have known.
Right, that's what I'm saying. The doctor's the one who says it.
No, but listen to me. From Solomon's point of view, as far as Solomon knows,
this
is all that there is. So he is actively committing genocide at that point.
Whether he was really
wiped them out, and the doctor's driving that point home he doesn't know that there were other ones. So
and
as far as he knows, this
exist.
Is the only species. This is the only group of this species. He committed genocide.
Now, is it anybody else think the Silurian on the screen looked?
It looked
probably
like
was the same actor who played the scientist from.
Yeah,
could have been. I mean,
I think
Silurian
it
because
actors
that took
or,
me a minute.
Well, Vastra and Vastra was the same actress.
Right. I mean, I'm just like you've got
whatever
the guys in the Dalek suits. They kind of come back and do that every year.
Well,
but,
and same with the
Santarin.
There we go. Yeah.
Okay, so you've got your okay, we've got a Siberian. We need you to come back.
How nice that they got that guy back.
Well, it was cool, but
I didn't think it was him. But
I did. I kind of wondered if it was him or not.
I mean, it's definitely him at the end of Churchill of last season.
Right.
But I don't think it was the same guy.
Then suddenly my brain's trying to, where does this fall? When does this fit? Because he didn't leave Earth. We know he's still there.
It seems like it wasn't the same character.
But then the fact that they said genocide, that threw me back into that, okay, now wait a minute. There were a lot of little things, just because there was so much information being thrown at us.
Just remember the twins from the two-parters is the same actress as Vastra.
Right, yeah.
I mean,
but Vastra's not the same gal as
but not the same
she's
character.
Not related, right.
Not the character, just the actor. Right.
I just think sometimes it's confusing.
It can be.
When we only get a moment, because
if you don't get clarification,
in his case, it's a very distinctive voice.
But I don't think I thought the voice was different. That's why I didn't think it was the same actor.
I think he's got a very distinctive sound to him.
I thought his face looked distinctive.
The other thing is, and it wasn't until I went back and watched, that's why I wanted to watch it a second time, because there was so much going on. And Mel said the same thing. She says, I can't wait to watch this again so I can figure out what just happened. Because there was
I felt that way more about Asylum.
I did too. Yeah, this one I thought was pretty cut and dry.
The last one I did.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just with, you know, why do they need to be in the same gene pool in order to pilot the ship? Again, that seems like a pretty nifty coincidence for his gang that, you know, everybody had a role to play. But it wasn't until I watched it the second time that I figured out that the Earth that is being threatened with this ship collision and is launching the missiles is not present-day Earth.
No.
It's future Earth.
That was the other thing that threw me off. He picks the pawns up, and then he lands on the ship, and then suddenly they're shooting missiles, and it was my first inclination was, wait a minute, we don't have any sort of defense system like that.
It was the
like
same
that.
Actor.
And then, was it really? And then my second...
he was in Wedding of River Song?
Yeah, yes, he was right. with Churchill.
With
yeah.
Churchill.
And then it was like, this is the future. So it's not, you know.
Well, I thought they did a decent job of that with the beginning of showing they had the time stamp on the... on the beginning.
Oh, they did have a timestamp there,
and then
too.
They had
that
a
timestamp.
Right.
That was the one that I missed.
I missed it, too.
For the future one, too.
That's right. I did miss that one.
Which, not to be...
That's why I didn't figure it out until later, so...
I found it very interesting that the future, that this whoever was launching this missile, all Indian...
It was the Indian Space Agency.
Was it? Okay. I didn't catch that.
Yeah. I didn't until the second time. That's why there were just a lot of little loose threads that I went, what am I watching?
It was one of those things where I kept going, what is the ISA? What would that stand for? ISA.
I kept trying
It wasn't until the sixth time that I realized everybody there is Indian. Oh, Indian Space Agency. Okay, I gotcha.
So, yeah, just like I said, it's not that it's a bad episode at all. It's thoroughly enjoyable. There's a lot of moments that are just fantastic. There's a lot of little things that just didn't quite... the jury's still out on them. The joke, for example, about do you have any organic matter in your pockets? Just my balls. And Rory... what? No, my golf balls. That was kind of one of those... It was almost a Slitheen joke, you know? It's like, I don't know how I feel about that.
But what's even better is the...
It's a simple design.
This any monkey could fly it.
That was a genius.
I thought that was great. And going into it, expecting snakes on a plane, that kind of joke, I was expecting grown jokes in this story. Because it's dinosaurs on a spaceship. I mean, how ludicrous.
I guess I should see snakes on a plane. I can't see how you would see any parallels to this to that. But
no, just going. Not in retrospect. Going into
just,
it.
Just going into it. Same title.
Just because of the title. Just because it's so out there and it's so ridiculous.
Okay, I don't think I would have done that even having seen Snakes on a Plane. But I think that was just a borrow of a title to make it more cinematic. But
Snakes on a Plane. The answer was on a spaceship.
And that's the only reason they made Snakes on a Plane. So they could call it Snakes on a Plane.
Well, there was a lot of fan stuff in that, too.
Yeah, well, that's true.
The fans are the reason they got the line in the movie.
That's an interesting...
It wasn't in there until the fans rallied.
Are the reason why the title remained the same, too.
That's true,
because it was written as Snakes on a Plane, and then the studio was going to change it. They said, no, you can't call it Snakes on a Plane. And they had such a... fan movement that said, no, you have to call it Snakes on a Plane, that it stay retain the title Snakes on a Plane.
Sam Jackson, the only reason he agreed to do it, because initially he was going to go work with this one director. He wanted to work with this director who had signed on, I'm doing something ridiculous, it's called Snakes on a Plane. And Sam said, well, I want to work with you, send me the script. So then he read the script. Well, in the meantime, that director had been replaced. He wasn't on the project anymore. And they came and said, are you still interested? And he says, are you kidding? The script says Snakes on a Plane. Yeah, I'm in. I've got to be in that.
And the infamous line wasn't in the script.
The infamous line wasn't in the script.
They went back and reshot it after test screenings.
Because everybody freaked out. How can you have Sam Jackson in this movie with Snakes on a Plane and he doesn't say... So, yeah. Now, did that make it a better movie?
No.
Probably not.
It's not a good movie.
It's not a good movie.
I will come out and say
that's
that
why
outright.
I avoided it.
But it's one of those B movies. It's like Piranha 3D. It's so enjoyable that it's so stupid that it's enjoyable.
The only B movies I like are the ones that were made in the 50s about radioactive.
What about 80s?
Dinosaurs.
What about Black Sheep?
Okay, that was not the 80s.
I'm talking current day.
What's Black Sheep?
Zombie Sheep?
Oh, I haven't seen
seriously?
That
oh, no. So good.
I did like The Toxic Avenger. I didn't like the three that followed that, but the first one was good.
I've seen all of them.
I liked Munchies. I liked Critters. I liked all those.
I'm a sucker for B-movies. Slither is a B-movie.
Oh, yeah, that was
but see, he didn't like Slither. You're not selling this.
Or Glenn doesn't have any taste in B-movies.
No taste in B-movies.
Exactly.
The selling point of this film is it's a drug dealer who's trying to get rid of an informant, and he's on the airplane going back to testify. And so there's a scene with the drug dealer, and he's on the phone with mysterious, you know, people, and he's like, yes, I understand it's a long shot. Don't you think we looked at every other conceivable option? Meaning the plan, which is we've put this crate full of poisonous snakes on the plane, and then a device goes off which lets them loose so that the plane will crash. That's the every other conceivable option, and we got snakes on a plane. That's what the powers that be in the brain trust came up with.
Not a very good brain trust, but still.
You couldn't get a hold of a Stinger missile to take down an airplane. Was rhinos on a plane ever considered? Every other conceivable option? That line alone was like, I don't care anymore. I will sit back in my Razzie Boy recliner and watch the rest of this cinematic masterpiece.
It's the A-team piloting a tank.
That was genius.
Anything else about dinosaurs in a spaceship?
This season just continues to be completely enjoyable.
Yeah, it's fun.
We're only two in, and I'm excited.
It really is just a fun episode.
I'm sad that we're only getting five episodes before the break.
We're almost half done.
Yeah, we only are. Next week we will be.
Halfway through next week we will be.
Yeah. Okay, way to get pedantic there.
I'll think halfway through the episode, oh, we're half done.
What's coming up, Sean?
Coming up next on the schedule, Friday night, Who, the week of the 14th, on the 14th of September.
On the eve of ConX.
Actually, I think ConX is going on Friday, too.
Yeah, it is.
On the eve of us going to
ConX. On the eve of us going to ConX. William Hartnell. The Gunfighters, which apparently don't purchase because Glenn's a really big Western fan, and a Western Doctor Who is just completely
I'm surprised he doesn't own it already.
Out of line. Who knew?
What?
You chastised me for buying it.
I chastised you, because I wanted to buy it. They went and bought it.
You can still buy it.
Bastard.
You can still buy it.
I can't believe you drummed that in memory back up, too.
I didn't think about the fact that you're a huge Western fan and a huge Doctor Who fan, so automatically any Doctor Who Western fell into your purview to
purchase.
And
there is only one.
I know.
Until next week.
And then there's two.
Which is, lo and behold, happens to be what we're reviewing next week. We'll obviously talk some about ConX. We will review The Gunfighters and the new Matt Smith episode, number 3, A Town Called Mercy. So there's a theme there.
I'm excited.
Yes.
I probably ought to work on the rest of the schedule for...
we're running out, aren't we?
We're halfway through the new season.
You got all excited because everything gelled and everything worked out.
Everything came together.
Like, yes,
and then we have
together.
Three more weeks.
And you were like so worried because you were waiting for release dates so that you could make sure the schedule was going to gel. And then suddenly it did and everything was wonderful. and then you forgot to keep going.
Well, after the stress was off, I stopped.
He's like, phew.
What's happening after that? Well, I mean, I've got through episode 5 of this.
Well, and you have...
Well,
you
6.
Have, you have...
Episode after that, we have a...
You have an outline for some ideas and plans that
we need to do some legwork on that. But
anyway.
There are things afoot.
All right. That's going to do it for this week. Until next week, I'm Glenn.
I'm Sean.
I'm Keith.
Cheers.
Good night, everyone.
Be seeing you.
You have been listening to Traveling the Vortex. Doctor Who and all of its associated programs are owned and trademarked by the BBC. No infringement is intended or implied.